Talk Show.
Recorded live.
Hello, this is William Fink on the Chris DeGenia Forum call. It's November 23rd, Monday, 10 p.m., and I have, so far, Sword Brethren has called in. How you doing?
I'm all right. Yourself, sir?
Just fine. How's it going?
I'm all right. One article I came across, some blacks up in arms. It turns out that there's a pretty exclusive white neighborhood, a suburb of New Orleans, or a district of New Orleans, I'm not sure, called Algiers Point. And it turns out that 11 blacks were trying to go into this neighborhood late at night. They said they were walking to a refugee collection zone to get ferried out of the area and put on a plane. Anyway, they were shot. So 11 blacks were killed and an undetermined number of wounded, probably several dozen wounded, and managed to escape.
My first question is, we're not in the middle of Hurricane Katrina, so why are blacks trying to go to a refugee collection zone?
This happened during Katrina, but the article just came out now.
Oh, yeah?
They call it Katrina's Hidden Race War. They said that the whites in this exclusive enclave were shooting any black person that came through their little district.
Well, I mean, does their incessant looting and pillaging have anything to do with that?
They say that they weren't there to loot and pillage. They just had to walk through this neighborhood to get to where they were going.
Oh, they weren't there to loot and pillage.
No.
Somehow I don't believe that.
And then they showed some footage from a documentary shot by some Danish folks that came over here in 2006. And it showed some whites sitting near a barbecue pit having some beers, and they were bragging about how it was just like pheasant hunting. They had some Yankee from Illinois on there that said that he's earned his wings and he's no longer a northerner, he said. He said he blasted one of them right in the face with some buckshot. And then they had some black that they were interviewing back at the studio. They took several pellets out of his face, his neck, and his chest, so it looks like he's the one that they got, but he managed to get away.
Something's hokey about this thing. I wonder if this is coming out because the whole Katrina thing has died down.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to keep it alive.
You would think that had this happened, they would have been beating the drums about it the day after it happened, and they would have been sharp about it for the last 4 years, would they?
Well, there's no way you could keep the media from saying anything about it, that's for sure. And it seems hard to me that nobody knows anything about this for 4 years.
And they said that the police know exactly who the shooters were, and they're just choosing not to do anything about it. You think it could be they just got a bunch of white actors or white-looking Jews told them to act like a bunch of hicks, kick back with some beers and talk about how they were shooting blacks, and they got a few blacks and said, talk about how you were shot.
Well, you know, you don't even have to get Jews to do that because there are white people that would do that for enough money for a 12-pack.
Mm.
It's sad to say, but it's true.
If I killed 12 people defending my land, I would probably button up about it. I might talk about it with my dad, but I'm not going to talk about it in front of a camera. I'm certainly not going to talk about it to the mainstream media.
Yeah, well, I know from experience that when you're facing federal prison time, you don't want to talk about anything. Period. It's not a pleasant feeling.
Absolutely. And even if it's a clear-cut case of self-defense, I don't want to give them enough rope that they can use to hang me. You know what I mean? I don't want a multi-million-dollar civil suit either.
The whole thing sounds hokey to me. This was on Stormfront. Did you check this out in any media sources?
Just a bunch of YouTube videos, some reporters doing interviews. But it looks like
some Jews trying to stir up a story because there haven't been any bad white people lately in the last 3 or 4 months, you know, since that Von Braun character.
The media outlet, I think it was Democracy Now. Have you heard of them?
It sounds like Arlene Johnson's website.
That's what I was thinking, you know. I imagine, were this true, MSNBC, Yahoo, CNN, ABC, Fox, they'd be all over. They'd be eating it up, wouldn't they?
Yeah, this is some phony story that some Jews made up because there haven't been any bad white people to pick on lately. So they had to fabricate some.
And they had to find a bunch of toothless, bubble-looking folks that are drinking beers while they're talking about, we just locked shooting Southern. I mean, do they have to? It's a typical portrayal of a white Southerner.
Well, I mean, white people go on Jerry Springer and disgrace themselves for a couple of $100 all the time. It's fairly common, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you were laughing about it. And if I shot someone in defense of my land, I wouldn't laugh about it. I'd have nothing to say about it. If somebody asked me, do you feel sorry? I'd say, You know, what's to feel sorry about? Somebody tried to violate my land, my dignity, and my honor, and they lost. They picked the wrong fight.
Yeah, well, it's a shame it didn't happen during Katrina. That's the shame. It should have happened about 340,000 times. We would have saved the taxpayers a lot of money.
Absolutely. And they also used the opportunity to talk about how gun sales went through the roof and they're trying to link guns with racists. You know, that could be another issue here, that the gun control crowd is basically losing ground and fast, so they're trying to make the gun issue a racial issue, saying that gun owners are racists.
Well, why wouldn't they? When you shoot a poor black robber that's raping your daughter, you're a racist, eh?
What's the proper thing to do? Help him load his truck up with your stuff and then take your wife under one arm and your daughter under the other arm?
And then give him your wallet. Yeah, well, that's what, you know, that's the goal of the meteor is the destruction of the white race. I mean, we saw that last night with in the We Be in the Jewish Problem program.
And I've noticed, too, all these self-defense shooters these days, they're always cracking up and crying and tearing up for their victim, supposed victim. You know, oh, that poor man that I had to shoot, I wish I hadn't shot him. I'm not a heartless SOB, but I'm the kind of guy, if someone breaks down my door at 2 in the morning, I don't have a problem shooting them, rolling back over, I'll go back to bed, and we'll deal with their body in the morning when I feel like calling the police after I'm rested and I've collected and gathered myself. But I'm not going to fall to pieces over some piece of human filth, so-called human filth, that wants to cut my throat for a nickel.
Well, you know, I experienced a home robbery at night. I woke up around 5 in the morning, 4 in the morning. I don't remember what time it was. I was only about 13 years old.
Hmm.
And I woke up with my dog standing on top of me on the third floor of my house in my bed.
Hmm.
My dog barking. And when I woke up, there were two eyeballs glaring at me from the stairwell that goes down to the second floor.
Ooh.
And I got out of bed, and at the same time, my father, whose bedroom is on the second floor, he got out of bed, and I had a bottle next to my bed or something. I grabbed it and I threw it at the guy, and he ran. and he ran right past where my father was about to come out from his bedroom, and we chased him. You know, out of the, he ran across my backyard and hopped the fence behind the house. But
I mean,
we had two break-ins when I was a kid, and they were both Negroes in a white neighborhood in Jersey City. So, they weren't white people. They were both. I saw them both, and they were both Negroes.
Mm.
And we lived in Jersey City, but it was in a predominantly white neighborhood. And The white people around us weren't robbing us.
But personally, I sleep with a pistol and an incredibly bright flashlight. So if I turn it on, someone's closing their eyes, and they won't be able to see the gun I'm aiming at them.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's blacks and crime go hand in hand. I don't see white people breaking into people's houses all the time. I mean, 90% of the burglaries and the armed robberies are Negroes.
And if
they're only about 8% of the population, if they're that high. If it's that high, maybe 12%, I think.
It's really telling when you're not even safe in your own home anymore. Very, very unfortunate as well.
Right.
But in our society, it's a necessary consequence of the social policies that we've allowed to be put into place above us.
Well, it boils down to white ignorance is what it boils down to, and the fact that nobody wants to do anything about anything until it affects them. They don't care about their brethren. You know, who cares if blacks are breaking into houses in St. Louis? They're not doing it in Oklahoma City, so we're not going to do anything about it.
But they could be doing it in Oklahoma City tomorrow.
Well, absolutely. But nobody seems to care unless it's in their backyard.
I think it's a lack of long-term sight, isn't it? People are just thinking about today, the here and now. They really have no insight into the future.
Their bellies today, that's it. That's all people think about. It's absolutely incredible. They don't even care about their own children and grandchildren. They don't even care about the world they're going to leave behind their footed children. And I experienced this in my own family. That they want what they can get out of the government today, and they don't care about the tax burden they leave their government.
That's incredibly selfish.
Yes, it is, and they don't see it that way.
If you ask somebody, what sort of world do you intend to leave your grandchildren, do they ever have an answer?
Right now, it looks like a Chinese one, doesn't it?
But how come they don't want to live in the world that they're saying my generation's going to have to live in? If third world America is good enough for my generation and my children's generation, why don't the people that are 50, 60, 70 now, why don't they just throw open the borders, let a billion people move here, and they can enjoy third world status?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, they've certainly showed us that they're not deserving of the world that their parents left them. That's the truth. That's the story of our race, I guess. Where we have something we never did.
Absolutely. It's the great tragedy of our people, isn't it? The generations that came before us were infinitely better than we are, and we've become complacent because we haven't had the struggle to survive. Most Americans don't know what suffering actually is, do they? They think if they run out of beer or they have to go a week without going out to eat, that's suffering. But they forget that the founding fathers of this nation had to live like fugitives in the woods, the forests, the hills, the mountains and the swamps and the bayous because the British had burned down their farms and armed blacks against them, and they were wanted. When they signed the Declaration of Independence, they were signing their own death warrant.
Yeah, it's an old observation of the Greeks, even, that austerity and severe conditions led to a hardy, strong race, and luxury led to the weakness of a race. Luxury caused national stagnation and weakness. And they understood that, and they used Persia was their example of that. And several Greek historians mentioned that.
The Persians wound up engaging in all sorts of perversions, didn't they?
Well, just about every wealthy nation has.
Right up towards the end, anyway.
Yeah, Rome was decadent. The Greeks became decadent.
And America is decadent.
Absolutely. It's part of the transition. It's part of the natural transition, I think, from powerful nation to imperialist empire. That the accumulation of wealth, once you become a powerful nation and take over the rest of the world, leads you to decadence.
And we've been absorbing inferior culture after inferior culture through absorbing all these people, so it's only natural we're going to begin to mirror these people, we're going to mimic them, we're going to adopt their cultural ways and their spiritual beliefs. It results in a watering down of our own values and virtues.
Well, wasn't that true all the way back to the Canaanites of the Old Testament?
Absolutely. Weren't we explicitly told, do not give your sons to their daughters and do not give your daughters to their sons? Make a covenant with them.
From them lest you follow their ways and depart from the ways of Yahweh. That's an admonition that's 4,000 years old.
So really, our people are making the same mistakes that they've been making for the last 4,000 plus years.
It never changes. We never learn from history. We have never, as a race, learned from history.
Well, you have a couple of callers.
Oh, wow, I got all kinds of people calling in here. I got to unmute. How do I unmute these people automatically?
You have to change your settings.
Yeah, I think I got it.
Hey, Bill.
Hello, Jay.
I was unmuted, if you can hear me right now.
Everybody's unmuted now, I hope. So if you're there and you've been waiting, I'm sorry. Hello. I don't, when I talk, I'm just not watching the screen. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Well,
I've had a question in particular. I apologize that it's a bit unrelated, but this question's been biting at me.
There can't be anything
forever.
Unrelated on this program.
Well,
nothing unrelated.
It's concerning the Bible, so I think that's within your range. Now, you know, in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 14 and 15, you know, the Jews who both killed the Lord Jesus Christ and their own prophets, it says that.
Yes.
But, I mean, there's a consensus that the Jews did kill Jesus, but then why does it go on to say their own prophets if we know that it's not their prophets?
Well, we do know that, but the thing is this. And even, you know, there was a group, a large group of Edomites in control in Jerusalem. Okay, there's no doubt. But why were those Edomites in control? Because the majority of Judahites let it happen. And why did Doug the Edomite volunteer and go and kill the priest of Yahweh for King Saul? Because the majority of true Judahites let it happen. And why did Jezebel the Canaanite get away with killing the priest of Yahweh? Because the majority of Israelites let it happen.
My specific question on that is, though, why does it call them their own prophets? I mean,
because
if it's not the Canaanites' prophets.
If you don't prevent the crime, you're responsible for it. That's by the law. That's in Leviticus.
But, I mean, it's not their prophets, though. I mean, that's my problem here. I'm trying to reconcile what the verb is.
Well,
if I could interject something here, I think we have to look at, like, present day current events.
Exactly. We're responsible for everything going on in the world because we're letting Washington get away with it.
And not all of Washington is Jew. I mean, there are our own people up there, be it that they're growing small or getting smaller in number, they're still there. And so we do become responsible both by letting it happen, by not speaking out against it. And, you know, we know that there were some of the people in control of Jerusalem at that time that were true Judahites.
All right. Well, you've always got your token Shabbat Goyim, so, I mean, that's just the way it's been for a while throughout the centuries. One could argue at least a couple millennium. It's going to continue to go forward if no intervention is carried out.
I think the real tragedy of our people is that history really does repeat itself. And if we go back even to Egypt and, you know, we see that at one time our people were prosperous, they lived in the best land, that, you know, eventually they came to a time of slavery. And the reason that is because they allowed the children of Cain to take over.
Now, I'm sorry, James, I have to interject here. Because in my translation, it does not say their own prophets. So take your King James and throw it in the garbage.
I was about to bring that point up. I was going to say, isn't this part of the impersonation? Obviously, the Jewish translators aren't going to write, "Oh, you Jews, you Jews who killed the prophets of Israel, you Jews who killed the white man's prophets." They're not going to write that.
So it's a translation error in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 14 and 15?
Read my version online. It's on my website.
I think I have read it, and it just changes it to Judean.
Okay, here we go. The words "their own" do not appear in any of the ancient manuscripts. It appears in the Textus Receptus, and it appears in some 7th and 8th century manuscripts. That's it. In the Codex Sinaiticus, in the Codex Alexandrinus, in the Codex Bazai, in the Codex Vaticanus, and in many other older codices, and I just named the oldest ones, the Vaticanus and the Sinaiticus, it says, "those who killed both the Lord Yahshua and the prophets, and banished us, and are not pleasing to Yahweh, and contrary to all men." It does not
say that answers the question. That's great. I did not know that.
Well, I always have to check my translation before I try to comment on anything at length. But when those people did those things, our people are responsible for them because they let them happen. This nigger in the White House right now, everything he does, the 40 million white people that voted for him in this country, they're responsible for it. Period.
They're all race traitors. I mean, what else
can
I say? Well,
absolutely. But all the evil things that George Bush did, too, and every president before him, the white people in this country are responsible for it. Because they
well, this gets back into a conspiratorial type of thinking, but you go back to the foundations of America. You've got Solomon Bush, who could be his ancestor, who was a Jew. So.
I know. You know, James Wickstrom pointed that out 10 years ago. I don't know. It was a long time ago. I was in prison. Somebody sent me a whole printout on Bush taken right from James Wickstrom's website about Solomon Bush. And I wrote back asking for the connection between, Prescott Bush and Solomon Bush. And they weren't able to provide it.
Well, we know Lyndon B. Johnson was a Jew. We know that there were several other presidents that we've had in the past that were Jews.
Roosevelt
being one. And I don't think he was the only one. I mean, I've even read something on the internet that Lincoln's dad may have been a Jew, but I don't know how true that is. I haven't found anything to really back that up.
I can't, you know, a lot of things that, I'm torn about the war of Northern aggression because it was the Rothschilds that wanted to split the nation. So in that respect, Lincoln did the right thing. But from a constitutional respect, he absolutely did not do the right thing. And I totally agree that we should have never forced the South to remain in the Union. But if Lincoln did it to stop the Rothschilds from splitting the country, you know, it's nothing in history is black and white. That's just the way it is.
I happen to think any war that we take up arms against our own kind.
Well, you're right. That's wrong, and that's the first wrong.
And I heard Sword Brethren talking about, you know, the older people of our generation and the kind of country that they were leaving to their children and grandchildren, and I thought about that a lot too, and I come to the conclusion that the people that we consider the elderly today, these are really the people of the 60s. And when I say the people of the 60s, I'm talking about they were young adults at that time. And they were all caught up in the drug culture and things like that. And I think they're a reflection of that period in time when they were soaking up the Jew dogma. And so when I go to, like, the VFW post or whatever to make a donation or whatever, I see a bunch of drunks sitting around getting drunk. And that's basically what I see. I don't see the respectful, dignified, elderly people that I remember as a kid.
Well, I mean, the only VFW hall I ever went to was the one that my uncle used to bring me to when I was a child in Massachusetts, and at that time they were a bunch of drunks sitting around.
Well, it could be that's not a generational thing, but I guess what I'm saying there is that when, you know, I'm 51 years old now, so.
You only got a couple of years on me. That's 2 years,
but
maybe.
I guess some people, like Sword Brethren, would say I'm elderly. But I don't consider myself that, and I look at people that are in their 70s, and I don't see the same sort of dignity or sense of honor that I once saw.
There is no dignity left. There is no honor left in this nation.
Yeah.
Because everybody's been programmed by the snakes that have no dignity and no honor.
Yeah.
There's more. I've seen far more dignity in prison than I ever saw on the street.
You may be
and,
right
and that's sad to say, but it's true. There's far more respect and honor for people in prison than I ever saw on the street. And it's crazy, but it's true.
another thing too, the idea that if you don't have it today, go ahead and charge it.
Mm.
And we're just feeding the Jew machine when we do that. I mean, we're really...
Well, that's our number one sin, is enriching the Jew.
Yeah.
If we stopped enriching the Jew, we wouldn't have any of these problems. That means stop buying Hollywood, stop buying Nashville, stop buying newspapers, stop buying media, stop buying it.
Yeah, come out of her, my people. I think that pretty much sums it up, and I think that's part of coming out, is not participating in the system anymore, and people have a real hard time breaking free of that system.
Right, and I mean, we still can't even, I don't buy any of that stuff, but I still spend, I don't know, my mother probably spends about $100 a month for this internet connection from Time Warner, but that's all they get out of me. You know, that's it. That's all they can have.
No.
Yes.
You think a lot of it has to do with people having skewed priorities? You know, there's really no sense of urgency about saving the nation, saving the race, saving the purity of our blood for the children and the grandchildren. But if you told people in the 60 to 80 age group that a year from now you're going to lose your prescription benefits, you'd have them rioting in the streets. But if you tell them 20
no,
years from now...
No, you wouldn't have them rioting in the streets until 364 days from now.
Or
maybe 366. They might not do anything until they actually lose them.
Okay, but if you tell them within 10 or 20 years, your children and grandchildren will be debt slaves in this nation,
nope,
and they will be a minuscule, pathetic minority ruled over by mestizo gangbangers.
Nobody cares.
There wouldn't even be letters to congressmen, would there?
Nobody cares. But the March on Washington, it should have happened in 1913.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't have, you know, it's a little late now, 100 years late. And we could probably go back before 1913 and point out greater evils.
Mm.
That you know, the way the Jews were manipulating the markets in 1895.
Well, my grandma knows about that, but she says most people don't know about the evil that the Jews have done and that they're still doing, and we need to find some way to educate people and get them to understand what they've done to this country and what they've done throughout history.
Well, they don't want to know. I mean, I just know from my own personal experience and trying to get with people. I mean, there are some awakened people, but most people don't want to know. And I think it's probably twofold, probably because they've been so brainwashed. And the other reason is because it would require an action on their part.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't want to go through any hardship, to take any sort of action. I mean, just
right,
to,
but it's clear that he who would lose his life shall save it, and he who would save his life shall lose it.
Yes.
I mean, it's pretty clear in the scripture.
Well, people want to be quote unquote
well,
happy
right.
with themselves.
Nobody wants to be the guy sticking his neck out. James is absolutely right.
I think if people knew the truth and they realized on a daily basis that they were doing nothing to advance the cause of the truth, they would rightly feel like a contemptible coward because they would be a contemptible coward, and they don't want to feel like a contemptible coward, so they close their eyes to the truth. They shut it out.
Well, just doing something as simple as taking your credit card and cutting it up seems too much of an action for a lot of people to take. You know, you've got to stop feeding the Jew. You've got to stop feeding the dogs, or else the dog's going to get more and more strong and vicious.
The speaking of guys sticking their necks out, I was talking to Mike Delaney at ProThink.org today, and I put a link on the front page of Chris Kenya. Sword brother, you all right?
I'm fine.
There's somebody making a lot of noise. I put a link on the front page of Chris Kenya today, and Mike actually went to an ADL seminar on hate. And confronted them about mentioning his name on the ADL website, and it's pretty good, isn't it? And the film is available on the front page of Chris Degenia. And you could get it off prothink.org, too. I got a link there, but I decided to put a copy of it up on my site.
I'll have to look at that.
Very worthwhile. And Mike really didn't get a foot in the door. He only stood there and talked to one of the ADL operatives and one of the FBI agents. But just, you know, seeing their attitude is informative because they're not going to listen to any reason whatsoever.
Well, what was the FBI doing there?
Well, it was an ADL seminar, and the FBI works for the ADL. You didn't know that?
So they were there receiving instructions on who to put the heat on.
Well, of course. Here's what I wrote on the front page of my website. The Anti-Defamation League is basically a front organization for the world's oldest crime ring and seeks to silence all political opposition under the pretense of combating hate. Yet they are only covering for history's biggest haters, the Antichrists themselves. Here, Mike Delaney of ProSync.org confronts an ADL field operative and one of their own at one of their own propaganda seminars.
Well, now it's just on your site, Bill, and I didn't see that. Is it at the?
Well, it's on the front page. You got to scroll down a little. I'm sorry, I can't squeeze it all in one.
I'm not complaining. I just didn't see it.
Yeah, I got to get a better skin for my media player so that people can see the front of the video, the first frame or something. I'll look into that.
I like the new site.
Hey,
yeah, I actually got two new sites. I mean, one of them's been around a while, but I never advertised it. But I actually have two new sites, and they're exact duplicates of each other, except for the look of the site.
Well, you changed the look of Krista Ganea, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. Krista Ganea is in an – they're both in online databases. They're both in something called Drupal. And it's state-of-the-art stuff, and I can put an article up in 2 minutes right on the front page and take me no time at all. That's why I did it, because it's a lot more flexible and a lot more dynamic. ChrisDeGenia.org and ChrisDeGenos.org are both exact duplicates of each other, and they're both mine, and they both hold all my content. All my writing, all my translations are on both of them. I did that so that basically I'm never down in case anything does happen. My site gets hacked or something like that. All I have to do is copy the database from one site to another or from my computer to the site, and it's restored.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey, who's speaking?
How you doing, Mike? I was just advertising you.
I was listening. That's why I called in. I said, hey, let me call in and see what's going on.
Oh, okay. How's it going?
It's going pretty good. Going pretty good.
Where's Robert? I haven't seen him around. He was in the forum the other night. He was on, I think he listened to the Mein Kampf program last night. Bob Ashton?
Oh, I thought you were talking about somebody else. Yeah, he'll be on a little bit later here tonight, depending on how late this goes.
Okay. Well, I'll go as late as people entertained, I guess. I don't know. As I could have a conversation. As long as the conversation runs, I'll be here.
Silverburner is bringing up a good point. He says, you know, why was the FBI there? And that was kind of my shock, too. You know, I was making a point. I was like, well, if I go hold a video at some community college or something, why do you have to have the FBI there? I mean, that was just like... I was originally going there. I chopped some of the parts out of the video where I was speaking before and the after parts. It wasn't professional, but I was talking about a certain guy that was supposed to join me there. The day before it was going on, I called this guy. I didn't even get to meet him yet. And, you know, he was like a retired vet and all this stuff. And I said, hey, man, I got this ADL thing going tomorrow. I don't know too many people in Phoenix. I need somebody to do the camera work. You don't even have to associate with me. You can sit on the other side. Matter of fact, I prefer you not act like you know me and just film me. Because what they were having is they're going to show this video called The Many Faces of Hate. And after that, it was going to be a moderated discussion. So that's what I wanted to do. And usually when I go do these types of events, I get the full suit and everything. I bring the paperwork. You know, I just come armed to the teeth with you know, information ammo. And so that was my plan. Well,
about a couple hours before the event, this guy backs out and says, well, I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it there. And like I said, I didn't get to meet the guy. I was assuming probably what he was doing is backing out from having the responsibility to have the videotape, but was still going to show up, and I wouldn't have known who he was because I didn't never met him yet. So I was sitting around with the wife. We're getting ready to head out of Phoenix up to northern Arizona here. And she's like, why don't you just go to the anyways, just see what happens. I'm like, all right. Yeah, I just go there in shorts and a T-shirt, you know, just like whatever. And I start walking up to the event, and then I hear, you know, the guy standing out there. I'm like, man, this dude looked like Abe Boxman's little brother. What would be the chances of this actually be the regional director here, you know? Sure enough, it was. And so I wasn't even, like, mentally prepared. Usually, like I said, when I go to these events, I get prepared. I psych myself up. I got the ammo. You know, I'm dressed so I command. I dress the part so I could, you know, I feel like I'm commanding more respect from these people. And, I just went there kind of on a fly. And I was like, well, I'm going to hold the camera. I held the camera the whole time from the parking lot all the way inside, all the way back out to the parking lot. One long video. And it just so happened that, you know, turned out the way it did. You know, turned out all right. And I was able to chop up the video and make them look how they're supposed to look, like liars, cheats, and murderers.
Yeah, well, that's good because that's, you know, it looked like he, the typical Jew, stonewalled, didn't want to listen to any reason, didn't want to cede one point, no matter how much proof you offered. That's, you know.
Yeah.
The only thing that explains that is that it's a race war against our race, and it's their race asserting themselves against our race, and we are not supposed to know that.
Mm-hmm.
They hate it when we know that, and they call us haters when we know that. If you wake up to what's going on in history, you're a hater. So you have a choice.
You're going to get a laugh out of this. The video they were showing was the racism of throwing the Japanese in the internment camps during World War II. That's something the Jews were responsible for doing.
No, they should have. They should have showed them throwing the Germans in concentration camps during, and the Italians they put in concentration camps.
Absolutely.
And they held them until 1948, 1949.
Yeah, that's incredible. Yeah, why would they show that? Why? What does that really have to do with anything today?
That skeletal looking woman that looked like she had a nose job that they chopped way too much off on.
Yeah.
She looked scary. My original point was, too, is when I first started walking up talking about this evidence, that's when that woman was like, you know, there was a couple times she even reemphasized her point on this, but I only showed it one time in a video, but they were definitely scaring me going in there and bringing up these topics in front of that crowd. They did not want me going in there and saying anything.
Absolutely.
And, you know, had I had a camera guy, I would have.
You know, did you see how fast her countenance changed between talking to you and greeting the people and then talking to you again, how fast she could change her countenance?
Just fake.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely an actress.
Mm-hmm.
She was a
Did you notice the ADL dude, though? His whole thing, like their number one tactic, they got a lot of tactics, but the tactic he was trying to employ on me several times and he was trying to catch me up on was to pick out any flaw I might have had in evidence and then completely say everything else was garbage.
That's what a Jew
does. And he wasn't really able to do that. Yeah, he wasn't able to do that. But when I started talking to the FBI guy and that guy started raising his eyebrows like he was semi-interested but not trying to tip his hat too much that he was, that's when, you know, Mr. Abe Fox and his little brother jumped in like, yeah, you just said this and I'm saying the exact same thing to this guy too.
Yeah, it was incredible. It was a good flick. That's why I put it on the front. It should be played. That's why it's on the front page of my website. And I put a link to your site there.
Well, thank you very much.
No sweat. It's so I mean, it's great that you get out. You know, most of these people are armchair warriors, and it's great that you actually get out and do something.
Man, I've tried to inspire people for years to do something to get out, dude. I mean, you know, a lot of people are like, look how calm you spoke to them. And I'm like, what? You know, that's the thing. People get intimidated by you. Why do you get intimidated by them? They're nobody to fear. You know? They know their day is coming. I mean, they can smell it. They're the ones that should be afraid.
And that's why I think all this is building to a crescendo. Because they sense that their time is short. I really believe that.
Yep, their day is
short. I was thinking that might be part of... That might be part of the reason they're doing all this stuff where they're, you know, it's like every movie they're putting out, like this new one, 2012, or, you know, their History Channel. Everything they put out now is all about how, you know, the world's going to come in the Mayan calendar. And I think what they're really basically saying is, like, subconsciously, the metaphorical sense of them saying, this is the end time for us. You know, it's coming to an end. It's going to come to a head in 2012. You know, they're obviously playing off in these conspiracy theories of Mayan calendar and all this crap, but.
Yeah,
I wonder if that's kind of like, you know.
Eli's into the whole date thing, and I'm not. And I kind of reject it. But, I mean, I would fight it. Believe me, I wish it would happen, but I'm not going to get upset if it doesn't. And I hope people don't get discouraged if something happens and 2013 comes.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm playing into the dating thing either because I don't mind.
Yeah, I understand
either.
That. Since you mentioned 2012, I just had to mention that. But I understand that you're not buying into that crap.
I don't buy into anything either. But I do see the sign, and I'm hoping it's going to be really soon.
Well, it's no doubt. All the signs are here. The race mixing and everything that's supposed to happen in the times of the end are here. But I'm not going to get discouraged if 2012 comes and goes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't think that we should pin our hopes to a date. That's all I'm trying to say. No man knows the day. That's scriptural. No man knows the day. But all the signs are here. There's no doubt.
Yeah. I hope it's before 2012.
Yeah, that'd be nice, too. Bring it on.
We're not really supposed to know the exact day, though, are we? Just the season. I think we can reasonably assert and make the claim that the season is right. These times are right.
It sure as hell seems like it, but we'll know soon enough. I mean, when it happens, we'll definitely know it. That's for sure. When the beast collapses, there's... No doubt.
One thing about the beast, it's so vicious that it'll eat itself. It'll implode. It'll self-implode.
You know something? I listen to some music, to some rock music. I can't help it. I'm a white guy, right? There's a song called Devour by a band called Shinedown. And when I first heard that song, I thought, well, there's the Jews talking about the destruction of their own own financial empire. And then when I saw that the people that wrote the song thanked Edgar Bronfman for their success that right on their little record thing, I was looking at it at the store. I knew that it was the Jews singing about and celebrating the destruction of their own empire.
Why would they do that?
They always trumpet what they're going to do.
They always trumpet their...
You know, they would blow up the world if they knew it would blow up every white man.
Mm.
They would have no problem with that and hope the three Jews live, right? That they're destroyers.
That's right. They're a destroyer race.
And that's what they are first. Well, what else are we going to talk about?
Well, Bill, have you been on Incogman lately?
Incogman? No.
You
Why?
Know, you come on there every now and then, don't you?
I think I've been on there once or twice, but just on a website.
You haven't made me post there?
No.
No.
Not that I know of.
Well, there's quite a few CI people that come on there. And, I
oh, yeah.
That, Yeah, I thought you had been on there. Someone posted under the name Bill. I just assumed it was you.
Oh, no, I would always post under WM Think.
Oh, okay.
That was my, you know, whatever WM, F-I-N-C-K, William Think, just like I post on my own forum. That's my handle everywhere I go. I mean, that's what it was on Stormfront. And I'll never post under a pseudonym.
Okay. Well, he's a good CI commentator anyway, so I thought it was you.
Okay. Nah, there's a couple of bills. There was a Chaplin bill floating around Pastor Visser's forum for a minute, and there was a bill on Stormfront, I think, for a while back when I was there, and I don't know. It's a common name, right?
Well, this one was dual C line, and this, so it couldn't have been the bill from.
Yeah, I'll always post under William Fink.
Oh well,
sorry to let you down.
That's all I know.
I don't have enough time to post on my own forum. And I have a section on Pastor Visser's forum, and I have a section on Pastor Winstead's forum, and I try to keep it up with my papers and my audio links, but I have a hard enough time doing that. In other words, I'm whining that I'm too busy. That's all. It can be a lot of work, you know. And I see you post all over the damn place. You post in, I've seen you post in some unlikely places too, but I've seen you post all over the place.
I like to try and get the word out. I figure time is running out. We've got to get the message out. We've got to get our people awakened.
Yeah, you're just a posting beast, I'm telling you.
I am. Every time somebody mentions something I can kind of segue into CI, I do it.
Yeah, that's great, because that's the only truth.
Absolutely. I firmly believe that.
Oh, here we go. Here's an article on CNN you might get a kick out of. They're talking about 8 weird ways to save the Earth, cloud whitening. They're going to spend $3 million per ship to build 1,500 ships that are going to pump some sort of gas or mist into the atmosphere, and it's going to counter greenhouse gas emissions, and they say it'll save the world. Well, I've got a cheaper solution, about 100 million 10-cent bullets, one for each Jew.
Yeah, that would save the world.
Well, here's the actual translation of that. Some Jew shipbuilder is going to make millions off building ships. Some Jew engineer is going to make millions off building these so-called equipment that's going to put all this stuff into the atmosphere, and then the Jews are going to sit back and collect all the money and watch us die from the stuff they pumped up in the air.
Exactly. That's the more likely scenario.
They say that they're just going to pump mist into the air. Well, why do we need to give some Jew $500 million to pump mist into the atmosphere?
Because that's the way it works. That's if they get the money, we get the gas.
And in the end, it'll be a new swine flu dispersal system.
Exactly. Anybody hear any more about this Ukrainian virus or anything about that on the news lately?
I don't know what to. I haven't taken the time to try to sort any of that out.
I heard.
I'm hearing about Poland now that there's low-level airplane traffic over Poland, and if there was hostile. If there was low-level airplane traffic over Poland, why isn't the Polish Air Force up there shooting them down? I can't understand that. Or are they doing it? I mean, I don't get it.
Maybe they've been threatened with a U.S. invasion if they intervene.
Well, there was definitely low-level plane traffic on 911, and nobody did anything about that.
Well, you know, that was the Mossad, but I mean, they don't have their grips on every country, and they've actually lost a lot of their influence in the Slavic countries.
Well, that's probably why they're attacking them with this hemorrhagic pneumonic plague.
Hi, Pat.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
I just don't understand if this was going on, why they wouldn't be shooting these planes.
Well, Bill, you remember how earlier we discussed about we'd be discussing the 1910 to 1920s, 1930s era of rising anti-Jewish movements and legislation in Eastern Europe, and how you postulated that the Soviets were brought in to put that down and bring it to an end, and I agree with that hypothesis. I think that since we're seeing a resurging tide of nationalism after the fall of the Soviet Union among most of the Eastern European Slavic countries, they've now been targeted for annihilation with plague, and most of their leaders are probably crypto-Jews who are going along with it. I think Ukraine is run by a Jewess. Their former president before her, I believe he was a Jew. His last name was Lazarenko. And generally, anybody who has the word Lazar in any portion of their
well,
name.
That's a Jewish name. There's no doubt.
Well, these people in Ukraine have refused the H1N1 vaccine. They're very, very wary of it, and well, they should be. And so the president, they've unleashed this pneumonic plague on them, which is, you know, Y pestis or Yashina. I forget the first what the Y stands for, but it's what bubonic plague came from, and it's just one of the plagues that comes from that particular bacteria, and it's the aerosol variety of it. It's very cheap, very easy to dispense in an aerosol, like they're doing with those low flying planes, and it creates pneumonic plague, and that's what they're having there. They're having a hemorrhagic plague that. You know, it's not what swine flu does. It's not one of the symptoms of swine flu.
It's Yersinia pestis.
Yeah, Yersinia pestis, that's it. So, and you look on any website and you'll see it describes it saying that is one of the bioterror weapons. That's one of the agents that they use, that's the first one that they'd use. And that's what they're using. And any place has been those planes, and of course it's contagious and all the rest, but and people were warned to stay indoors because they were going to be spraying something, and sure enough, they did. And now the president is out there saying, oh, dear friends, please be sure you get your flu shot. You know it's the only way to avoid infection. Vaccines are the only things that work. You know that. You know, I mean, just total, you know, bold-faced lies to try to get these people to poison themselves more, like the Ukraine hasn't been through enough at these bastards' hands.
Yeah. Right, when they can't destroy their people, they steal their daughters and bring them to Tel Aviv to work in whorehouses.
Right. Well, apparently there's been a case of hemorrhagic, it's in the U.S. too, and look at the chemtrails that we're under. Who knows, you know, if they're putting it in that lately. Because this swine flu thing has not taken off. As a matter of fact, flu season is already over in South America, and it wasn't even a bump in the road. It wasn't even that much. And of course, they didn't pump it up with vaccines, so they didn't get any. You know, they had very little reaction.
Well,
so they have to pump this thing up in chemtrails, or how they're doing it.
I'd like to point out that the Prime Minister of Ukraine, she's some woman whose name I really can't pronounce, Yulia Tymoshenko. She took the surname of her mother. Her father abandoned the family. Father Vladimir Abramovich Grigon. There you go, Abramovich.
Well, he abandoned the few, isn't he?
He abandoned the family when she was three. She then ended up marrying, it looks like her mother married, no wait, when she was 19, she married a mid-level Soviet Communist Party bureaucrat, and then she got a degree in economics. My guess is that her head's been filled with Marxism-Leninism, and her genetics are Jewish, so, you know, she's just a commie Jew, one of many.
Yeah, she's a Jewess. There's no
but she identifies as Ukrainian Orthodox.
Well, of course she does.
And she was linked to a scandal with former President Pavlo Lazarenko.
A scandal involving a Jew in politics. That's novel.
Kickbacks in exchange for her company's stranglehold on the country's gas supply. Apparently, she and her ilk, looks like her husband, some in-laws, they were part of the oligarchs who bought up Russia and Ukraine for a song.
Oh, well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Patricia, I saw on Fox News, you know, fair and balanced, today they were saying that the swine flu has apparently peaked in this country.
Oh, yeah, but they haven't got enough action out of it yet, though. That's why they're still vaccinating kids in Louisiana, Gerald.
I know.
It's terrible. I mean, they have to use it. Every pandemic, you know, is an injected pandemic, or in this case, you know, aerosol pandemic. But it's crazy. What I think is really interesting about this is that when I first started following the dead scientists, you know, the dead microbiologist story,
right,
it was like 11 in five months.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's 93.
Wow.
I mean, and most of them world-class microbiologists, all with mysterious circumstances that they've refused to investigate. I wrote an article about it recently, and I said an X-File producer could fill an entire season with stories of mysterious circumstances surrounding the deaths of these people. And they began as early as 1994. One guy whose project was filling payloads of Scud missiles with mycoplasma strains was deliberately hit by a truck. The incident was reported as an accident. The other was a scientist and his wife who were murdered after they met a journalist friend, and they were discussing plans to expose Harvard's Howard Hughes Medical Institute's funding of a special ops research.
Now, Scud missiles were Iraqi missiles.
Exactly. That was in Iraq, and they blamed it on the Mossad.
Well, Scud missiles originated in the Soviet Union. Iraq simply acquired a large number of them since the Soviets dumped a lot of their surplus equipment all over on their client states.
Yeah, right. But, I mean, nobody's used them lately in warfare except for the Iraqis. And that
But mycoplasm, and they can aerosol that any way they want, is a precursor to a really disgusting type of leukemia that can kill you within weeks.
Mm.
And once it goes systemic, and usually what sets it off systemically
is... Kind of like a leukemia Don had?
Yeah. And it's set off by strenuous exercise, stress to the body. We'll set it off and cause it to go systemic.
Patricia, I love you. You just gave me an excuse never to exercise again.
Exactly. There you go. There you go. Keep walking.
No.
Keep walking.
She said strenuous exercise. She didn't say you have to become a couch potato.
Yeah.
Right now, lately, I've been an internet potato.
Yeah, I know, Jan. That's the truth, huh? Man. Well, so, you know, and if you rule out for these 93, what I thought was fascinating, if you rule out just a couple of octogenarians, a plane crash here and a snowy car accident there, I mean, that leaves a huge question. These scientists have got to have something to do with the plague going on in Ukraine and Central Europe. I just said coincidence there must be having a field day.
Either that or they were such high level that they could have exposed it.
Well, that's the thing. Back in 2002, this microbiologist, Ian Langford, he was 40 years old. He was found dead in his home near Norwich, England, naked from the waist down and wedged under a chair. And his home was blood spattered, all the walls, and apparently ransacked. And he was an expert in global environmental risk and disease. And the Norwich coroner's office said they had no reason to suspect any foul play. The spokeswoman said it was natural causes death. It wasn't a death which required an inquest. And he was linked to this guy, David Kelly, and I'm sure a lot of you remember that name. He was a senior advisor on biological weapons to the UN biological weapons inspections teams. And he predicted to a colleague that he'd be found in the woods. 6 months later, found in the woods with his wrist slashed near his home.
Wow.
And so this guy, John Eldridge, who's editor of what's called the Nuclear, Biological, and Chemical Defense Weekly, they call it NBCs, that's what the industry term is, told a British newspaper that Kelly's and Langford's death were linked and thought other microbiologists should be concerned for their safety. And Eldridge is a Royal Navy expert, and he said scientists involved in microbiologists were terrorist targets under close scrutiny from the U.S. and Russia. So this other guy, Yoram Kaufman, is struck while he's riding his bicycle in May of 2006. And what do you think his field of expertise was? Well, meteorology, climate change, and a specialty in analyzing aerosols, airborne solid and liquid particles in the atmosphere.
Mm. Well, it seems that people who are involved in some nefarious plot to poison the world should be careful. But then again, should we really shed tears for these people, since doubtlessly they were working on horrible, unspeakably evil pathogens for disgustingly wretched purposes, and now
the Zog regime just tying up loose ends and getting rid of people who know too much.
Yeah, I don't feel bad for them if that's what they were doing, unless their conscience was starting to bother them and they wanted to come clean.
Mm.
But they had my final point on this is this guy named Robert G. Webster, who's a professor of virology at St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. He sent a letter in February of 2003 to the dean of the School of Medicine at the University of Texas because they, in support of building the National Biocontainment Lab. And he said the technologies are in place with reverse genetics to generate any influenza virus we wish. Studies are envisioned using genes of the 1918 Spanish flu. Well, they've already done that. That's what Jeffrey Taubenberger was able to do when they dug up that corpse in Alaska. They weaponized the 1918 Spanish flu virus, and that's what they think is part of the component in H1N1. So this guy who was called the virus expert who warned of epidemics, Robert Schoch, he had the lead in spending $11 million federal grant to ensure the new lab would contain the most hazardous pathogens known to man, especially tropical and emerging diseases as well as bioweapons.
You know where most of the world's the companies are that do that sort of work are in Israel.
Oh, I would bet, but they've got labs all over the place in university labs like.
Well, right, but they have actually been able the last 20 years to consolidate a lot of those companies in Israel.
Also, I've read some UN reports. They try and raise the alarm that for $50 million, neo-Nazis could make a racially specific biological weapon, and thus the UN needs to spend $500 million doing research into genetic-specific bioweapons so they can know how to counter them. My guess is that the Jew is cooking up something that will kill all non-Jews.
Yeah, right. Like half of the world's biotech firms are in Tel Aviv, and they're talking about neo-Nazis making biological weapons.
Yeah, I know. Jeffrey Taubenberger said the reason they had to dig up the 1918, you know, Spanish flu was so they could develop a weapon against it. Like, what? we're going to recreate Velociraptor dinosaurs so we can create a weapon to kill them. They're dead and gone. Leave it alone. But no.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, maybe that stupid movie was prophetic, too. Huh?
Well, we don't need a vaccine.
Except the dinosaur is really just about just about a billionth of an inch long.
Yeah, and I mean, the way you look at it, we don't need a vaccine to protect against a virus that in order to find, they have to go to Alaska and dig up a 90-year-old corpse.
Well, you know, it does sort of confirm the idea that I've had for a long time that there is a genetic component to the seed line of Cain and a genetic component the seed line of Israel.
Well, it's absolutely clear in my mind without all of this. I mean, just from history, just from an observation of the last 2,000 years of history, it's clear to me. And that's what can, you know, it was my own, I'm not a great historian, but it was my own knowledge of history that led me to believe identity when I heard it.
Yeah, well, you are a great historian, Bill, but besides that, I just firmly believe that genetics control more than just your appearance. It also controls your behavior, your belief system, and
I always believed that genetics, and you know, there was a blurb on the front street of the Wall Street Journal, and I think I might have it somewhere. It was about 10 years ago. There was a study at Harvard, and the conclusion of the study was that genetics governed not what you believed, but what you had the capacity to believe. And it was on, you know how the Wall Street Journal always runs those two little columns down the center with all these little news blurbs? It was in one of those, and I had hoped to see a larger article in it later that week, and I never heard another thing about it.
That's the same thing I heard about, I remember when all this genome project and everything was full underway and everything that I had specifically read an article in a newspaper, because I was taking the newspaper at that time, that talked about there being a particular sequence of genes that was specific to white European people, and the article also mentioned the fact that there was no specific gene that was peculiar to Africans, which kind of, you know, blew the idea that everybody originated from Africa. And
well, right. It's,
that
and
scientists
it's,
were baffled by this idea that there was a specific gene sequence that you could look at and say, oh, that person is a white European.
Just in a little bit I read about genetics. It's not the genes that we have in common that matter. It's the genes that differentiate us, that they, no matter how many times they multiply, can never, ever acquire, that are important.
Yeah. So I find it fascinating that the Jews are working on this idea that neo-Nazis are trying to create a virus specific to kill non-whites, when it could be quite obvious just by the fact that white Europeans have a genetic sequence that's peculiar to them alone, that they could be working on something to actually eliminate us.
Absolutely. Well, right, but I would believe that Jews have to have genetics that are peculiar to them also. And that's why they have all these they have a wealth of genetic diseases that nobody else really gets.
Yeah.
Without that blood, without that Jewish blood.
Well, Pilgrim's bringing up this great point here. She says, and except those days should be shortened, there should be no flesh be saved.
Right.
The elect make those. Yeah, exactly. I mean,
that's what the scripture says.
Now, I'm just looking up Revelations on your site, Bill. I always think about the vials, the plagues.
Well, I was going to bring that up, and I haven't had the chance yet. But, you know, what I was going to say was this. I never really dreamed that the prophecy concerning the seven vials would be fulfilled so literally.
Well, Bill, one thing I found, too, I think that a lot of these Jewish scientists, so-called scientists, they're no longer able to deny that race is a reality. I read an article, I think it came out of the New York Times, if I recall, talking about how as genetic research progresses, they're basically confirming the existence of race, but they don't know yet to what extent that actually matters. And they say that maybe by some coincidence or some irony, they will be able to prove through genetics that the blacks are superior to the whites. And they said that would be a wonderful day and quite ironic for the neo-Nazis.
Well, of course it would. But, you know, I have one picture on my website that proves that that's a whole lot of bunk.
The one I post a lot. Rome today. Or Rome,
right, I stole that from Stormfront. I actually stole that from Stormfront. Back when I first got out of prison, I found it on Stormfront. I got to have that. And I put it on my website a couple of months later.
I mean, why do we need genetics to tell us anything about superiority in a racial hierarchy when we can look to human history, cultural achievements, and current events?
Absolutely.
Current events especially. I mean, we don't even have to go back 100 years. All we have to do is look at today.
The Negro as a race has achieved nothing. A few of them occasionally on an individual basis achieve something, but usually under close white supervision.
Well, you know, they did invent peanut butter, according to them.
According
to them. Well, that was actually, I think it was George Harvey Kellogg who invented peanut butter.
I know, but I'm just joshing you there, sword brother.
Oh, okay. And even if they did, I mean, what kind of an accomplishment is that? You know, we say that our people had the Renaissance. Oh, yeah, food, well, we got peanut butter.
Let them have the
So what's going on with that? I want to ask Mike, what's going on with the hate crimes thing? When are they going to really roll this out and start using it?
For me?
Yeah. I would think you'd be close to anybody. Anybody can tell me what's going on with that.
I'm not going
to. I don't think they're really going to be too successful with it, to be honest. And when they finally do step on the toes of trying to wrap up, you know, vocal hate crimes. I mean, they certainly got enough hate crimes that if you perform any action and you've ever been known to be racially aware, then you're a hate criminal then. I mean, but as far as them actually locking down what we can say, you know, like coming up with Holocaust laws and stuff like they've neuterized the Europe, mostly Europe with that, I don't think they're really going to be able to be too successful with that here.
Well, I don't know. They've been pretty successful. I mean, whites tend to just roll over and play dead whenever they see someone else. It's like, it's not me, so I don't have to worry about it.
Well, there's no doubt there's going to be court challenges to it, and we'll just see we'll just see how they work out. But, I mean, it's going to be years before it actually culminates into anything real on one side or the other.
I think the U.S. has two things going for it. One, we have freedom of speech codified in our Constitution and also the right to keep and bear arms. And, you know, I'm of the opinion that I don't need a stupid Constitution to give me the right to either, we do have that, which is something that Europe does not have.
Well, they didn't from the beginning either. They've never had it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, despots love gun control.
Not Greece, anyway. Freedom of speech is that, I mean, people don't see it because of the way the words are translated, but it's actually a major point in the Bible.
You have a special word for that, Bill. What is it?
Free-spokenness.
Free-spokenness, that's right.
That's exactly what it is. That's what free-spokenness appears quite a few times in my translation.
Aside from blasphemy, right? People don't have the right to blaspheme God, do they?
Well, they've taken it to be that, but I don't think anyone does. As a matter of fact, this whole idea of freedom of religion, I just don't think that was the original intent. All of the founding fathers were Christian.
The founding fathers would be rolling over in their graves if they knew that we let all of these non-Christians in here and gave them a voice in this nation. All of their writings, all the writings of all the founding fathers where I've read them mention the subject, clearly shows that they intended this to be a white Christian nation. And they were worried about Eastern European immigrants. They were worried about Hungarians and Czechs. And Poles.
What concerned them about those people?
Because they're basically a different culture and a different language, and they had envisioned an America or a North American continent reserved for the Anglo-Saxons.
They were concerned about the Germans since the Germans wouldn't give up speaking German. And
so
there was
some of them were,
that,
yes, right. Franklin was a Germanophobe, and he was very afraid of the German influence. And yes, a lot of the English actually even despised the Germans.
And from what I've read in Stoddard and Grant, who both think the Germans are racially great, but culturally they set this country back, they maintain that solely through their insistence on clinging to their German language, they set this country back. They hurt the unity of the nation by not simply just, you know, moving here and learning English and speaking English. But now we have people that are coming here from totally foreign alien cultures, and they're of a foreign alien blood, and they don't speak English. So it's infinitely worse.
Right, absolutely.
You know, in the 1800s, no one conceived the idea that blacks would ever be brought in on a social standing with white people. It was just not even considered. Even Lincoln spoke out against it.
Of course. It was beyond common. I mean, anybody that had common sense would have known back then that it just couldn't happen.
Jeff 14th made a great comment. He said, hell, they'd roll over, and I assume he means roll over in the grave of the founders if they found out that women are voting.
Yes, they would.
I agree.
They absolutely would.
I agree. I think that was one of the nails in the coffin myself.
Well, if they found out that we basically just have a citizenship system whereby it's just a piece of paper and it has nothing to do with loyalty, knowledge of the country, similarity of blood, shared heritage, you just come here, reside in the country for X number of years, and they give you a little card. It's just like getting a driver's license.
Well, the beginning of the end was the 14th Amendment, as far as that's concerned. There's no doubt.
In fact, it's easier to become a citizen of the United States than it is to get a Class 3 weapon. That's absurd.
Well, you know, I don't think that they raised the blacks to the standard of whites. I think they reduced whites to the standard of blacks.
Right.
They made us all slaves.
Denominator.
Well,
yes,
it's impossible to raise the blacks to the standards of the whites.
So here in Louisiana, when they started the integration back in the 60s, they said that we needed to close the black schools and bring them into the white schools, that it would raise the caliber of the black student. Well, just the opposite has happened. The white people, the white kids, more or less have gone down to the level.
Well, I mean, just look at look at whatever has changed in our educational system since the 1950s, and look at our standing in education since the 1950s. And it's the only thing that's changed basically is the fact that we've integrated our educational system.
Yep, that's true.
And
I had Polish immigrants at my desk one day, and they had moved to California, and they told me how appalled they were by the curriculum and the level of education their children were getting in California. It was far below what they had in Poland.
Right. I'm sure it is. It's incredibly low. And they are teaching to the least common denominator. There's no doubt. No child left behind. There's no doubt that it means every child left behind.
Speaking of no kids left behind, they're now doing No Child Left Unimmunized. They've slid that into a new bill. They're losing control of this mandatory vaccination thing, or voluntary vaccination. Eyes are being open to it, and so now they're really trying to legislate it to get you to poison your children. No Child Left Unimmunized. Doesn't that have a nice ring to it?
We must save the children.
Yeah, well, that's why they want them all to have health care.
Well, I know this is open to interpretation, but I'm looking at Revelations 16, starting in verse 1. It says, "And I heard a great voice from out of the temple saying to the seven messengers, 'Go and pour out the seven bowls of wrath of Yahweh into the earth.' And the first went out and poured out his bowl into the earth, and there came a bad and grievous sore upon men who had the engraved mark of the beast and who worshipped its image." And I always, whenever I hear about these plagues and things like that, I always think about this. And I know that it probably has historical significance, but, as history repeats itself, I also think that there's nothing new under the sun, and these things happen, and it seems as though it always happens in greater and greater significance. As the cycle goes around, it happens on a much larger level, greater scale, and that's what I see when I read the scripture. I say, there is nothing new under the sun. Everywhere that the white race has gone, the Jew has followed, they've always followed the same MO and eventually destroyed our societies. And then we move on to another place, we create a new society, and the Jews move in and do what they always do and destroy that. The difference this time being is that there's no place left for us to go.
You know what I posted to my website this week? I did it just for the hell of it because I liked it when I first read it. I first read it about 6 or 8 years ago. It was published in the Barnes Review. And I found a copy online and I threw it on my website. It's under the miscellany link all the way on the lower right-hand side. And it's George Lincoln Rockwell's poem, The Fable of the Ducks and the Hens. And
oh,
it tells
yeah,
that
yeah.
same exact story, that wherever we go, they follow and they wreck everything every time they catch up with us.
Yeah.
And absolutely.
Only this time there really are no new lands, despite what all these white nationalist groups are talking about going to the Northwest or whatever. There really isn't a place left for us to go.
The Jews already bought up half of Montana.
Yeah.
They've already owned half of Montana.
They own half of Sandpoint, Idaho. They own half of Coeur d'Alene. Matter of fact, the neo-Nazi compound in Coeur d'Alene, I've read, is owned by a Jew.
They won it in a lawsuit.
Pardon me?
They won it in a lawsuit. Some Jewish lawyers helped some Indians sue Aryan nations, and they got their compound.
Oh, Right.
Before we get too far away, can I read a clip here from an article, What It's Like to Teach Black Students, written by a white teacher who used to teach in a southeastern high school.
Oh, this was great. Go for it.
That's on my website. That's in the Christigenia Forum.
I put it there.
Go ahead, read it.
Blacks, on average, are the most directly critical people I've ever met. That shirt's stupid. Yo, kid, a bastard. Yo, lips big. Unlike whites who tread gingerly around the subject of race, they can be brutally to the point. Once I needed to send a student to the office to deliver a message. I asked for volunteers, and suddenly you would think my classroom was a bastion of civic engagement. 30 dark hands shot into the air. My students love to leave the classroom and slack off, even if just for a few minutes. Anyway, away from the eye of white authority. I picked a light-skinned boy to deliver the message. One very black student was indignant. You picked a half-breed, and immediately other blacks take up the cry, and half a dozen mouths are screaming, he half-breed, he half-breed. Then I found another clip here. Anyone who teaches blacks soon learns that they have a completely different view of government from whites. Once I decided to fill 25 minutes by having students write about one thing the government should do to improve America. I gave this question to three classes, totaling about 100 students, approximately 80 of whom were black. My few white students came back with generally conservative ideas. We don't need to cut off people who don't, or we need to cut off people who don't work was the most common suggestion. Nearly every black gave a variation on the theme, quote, we need more government services. My students had only the vaguest notion of who pays for government services. For them, it was like a magical piggy bank that never goes empty. One black girl was exhorting the class on the need for more social services, and I kept trying to explain that people, real live people, are taxed for the money to pay for those services.
But let me say something real quick, and then you continue.
All right.
This is why the Jew needs the black vote, because the black is a natural Marxist. Go on.
Yeah, it come from whites, she finally said. They stingy anyway. Many black people make over $50,000 a year, and you would also be taking away from your own people, I said. She had an answer to that. They half-breed. The class agreed. I let the subject drop. Many black girls are perfectly happy to be welfare queens. On career day, one girl explained to the class that she was going to have lots of children and get big fat checks from the government. No one in the class seemed to have any objection to this career choice.
I don't doubt it one bit. It's everything I believe, everything that I observed as a kid or as a young adult growing up in Jersey City, that's what I read. That's why I posted it online.
Here's a great one. Just one more excerpt here. How the world looks to blacks. One point on which all blacks agree is that everything is racist. This is one message of liberalism they have absorbed completely. Did you do your homework? Nah, homework racist. Why'd you get an F on the test? Test racist. I was trying to teach a unit on British philosophers, and the first thing the students noticed about Bentham, Hobbes, and Locke was, they all white. Where a black philosopher at? I tried to explain that there were no blacks in 18th century Britain.
Black philosophers.
You can probably guess what they said to that. That racist. One student accused me of deliberately failing them on a test because I didn't like black people. And just one more along the same lines. My students were sometimes unable to see the world except through the lens of their own blackness. I had a class that was host to a German exchange student. One day, he put on a PowerPoint presentation with famous German landmarks as well as his school and family. From time to time during the presentation, blacks would scream, where the black folks? Where the black folks at? The exacerbated German tried several times to explain that there were no black people where he lived in Germany. The students did not believe him. I told them Germany is in Europe where white people are from and Africa is where black people are from.
Hold. We're missing a key element here, too. Could any of the black students have ever done a PowerPoint demonstration?
No.
That would be the question.
They insisted that the German student was racist and deliberately refused to associate with blacks.
Yeah, well, everything does boil immediately down to race for them. Here's a typical scenario, and I went through this many times, and you always got to stand your ground, and you get labeled a hater, and you laugh at it, and you tell them to go to hell. You're waiting online for an hour and a half for a microwave. And you finally get the microwave, and a nigger runs up with a bowl of soup and says, can I heat this up real quick? I'm only going to be a minute. And you tell him, no, I'm not letting you go because I just waited for an hour and a half. Oh, you were racist.
Yeah.
Immediately. Immediately.
No way.
It's all the time. All the time.
Well,
immediately, you're a racist. You could have been waiting there for 18 hours. They wouldn't care.
Well, if I can read just another paragraph here, this is about the fruits of integration. Can I go on? Is that all right? I don't want to pick up the... Okay. What about black boys and white girls? No one is supposed to notice this or talk about it, but it is glaringly obvious. Black boys are obsessed with white girls. I've witnessed the following drama countless times. A black boy saunters up to a white girl. The cocky black dances around her, not really in a menacing way. It's more a shuffle than a threat. As he bobs and shuffles, he asks, "When are you going to go with me?" There are two kinds of replies. The more confident white girls get annoyed, looks away from the black and shouts, "I don't want to go out with you." The more demure girl will look at her feet and mumble a polite excuse, but ultimately say no. There's only one response from the black boy. You raise this. Many girls, all too many actually, feel guilty because they do not want to date blacks. Most white girls at my school stayed away from blacks, but a few, particularly the ones who were addicted to drugs, fell in with them.
Way it works.
I remember the very first day that we had desegregation at my elementary school. And this was in Chesterfield County, Virginia. And there was one little Negro boy that came into our classroom, sat down next to a white girl. And it wasn't long before he was trying to put his arm around her. I mean, we were only like in, you know, fifth grade. I mean, and he's trying to put his arm around her. She's moving away from him. She's getting really annoyed with him. And I went up there and punched him.
Good man, James.
And the teacher made us both go into the front of the classroom and shake hands and say, and then she says, "Well, isn't this wonderful? We're all going to get along," that kind of crap. I can't remember all that she said. And I just looked at her and rolled my eyes and went back and sat down. But when I told my dad about it, my mom and dad about it that night, my dad got really upset about it. And he went in and talked to I wasn't there, so I don't know what all he said to her, but I know he went in and talked to the teacher about it. And whatever he said to her, she never bothered me again. But the teachers were the first to get indoctrinated.
Well, of course, in the Marxist colleges they had to go to.
But, I mean, he was trying to put the move on this white girl. And fifth grade. Now, that's pathetic.
I never knew a teacher. All the teachers in the schools I went to were ultra-liberal. I never knew a conservative teacher.
I knew a few, but I'm a little bit older. But I knew a few.
Well, I only went to school for 10 years, too, so.
Yeah. But this was back in elementary school, and I knew a few. And they were all white.
You know, I read about some articles. A 21-year-old Negro in the 11th grade tried to rape his teacher after school had ended and everyone had gone home. They said he dragged her off into a bathroom, but she managed to claw him in the eyes, kick him, and got away. And his defense was he didn't know what he was doing was wrong. And some attorneys have seen that his IQ puts him below the retarded level. Well, how does that make him different from any other black out there?
I was on a flight to Europe one night from Boston, and we took off, and I'm probably out an hour or so, and this black man, he was in a private, you know, army private uniform, said to me, "Excuse me, miss, what are we over?" So I looked out the window, and, you know, I mean, it was pitch black, so I said, "Oh, the ocean." And he said, "Oh, which one?" And I said, "Oh, that'd be the Atlantic."
Where's that? He was just trying to get a conversation with you. That niggers will do anything they can to have a white woman pay attention to them. They'll do anything they can to get a white woman's attention. And I swear, and I tell people this all the time, every nigger in prison, which is most of them, every black male in prison right now is lusting over a picture or a vision of a white woman.
Mm.
Every one of them. And that's all they talk about. It's all they talk about amongst each other. It's all they talk about.
They're predators.
How many white women they're going to debauch? How many white women they're going to get on crack? How many white women are going to do this and that? And it's all they talk about.
I wrote an article for the Citizens Informer, the Council of Conservative Citizens, that came out in their fall/winter 2006 edition, And basically it starts with, "Is you down?" And those are the words uttered by a mob of blacks as they grabbed their crotches and gyrated against some white women. The white women pushed them away and continued on to a Halloween party. Some black girls accused them of, "You'd be trying to steal our men." So they jumped them, these black girls, and they started beating them with skateboards. They held them down, and they punched them, they kicked them, they hit them, and then other blacks joined in. And these three girls were subjected to a horrible beat, and they all wound up hospitalized. And it was not investigated as a hate crime.
And it definitely should have been a hate crime. But blacks are never, ever held as hate criminals.
Or homosexuals. They never do hate crimes either.
But it's not just the men. It's the women, too, you have to watch out for. Because, you know, you think that women are going to behave in some feminine fashion, but the next thing you know, there's some she-boom curling up a fist and she's knocking you out.
Well, they're extremely aggressive. They're more than aggressive than the men.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they are until you show them that you're not going to back down. It's been my experience twice that they'll talk a lot of crap, but the minute you let them know you don't back down, they do.
You know, one of the amusing things that happened during the 60s in Shreveport, they had what they called the Bumpers Club, and these big, fat, nigger women with the big buttocks, they would go up and they would catch a white woman or an older white man with armloads of groceries or things, or say a white woman trying to get on a bus, and they would go up and they would bump them with their butts and they would cause them to knock everything out of their hands. And they would just get on the transit vehicles constantly all day long just to bump people, and they called them the Bumpers Club. That was just part of the things that went on in the 60s when the integration started. They would also they would go up to a door that was about to be open. They'd see a white man going into a revolving door or something, and they would jump in front of him real quick and go through and then turn and say, "Oh, thank you, sir," you know, as if he was respecting her womanhood and allowing her to go on in. But they did a lot of things like that. It's really comical, but it's also very sad. But we were under attack tremendously here in the South. And, of course, we had the Freedom Riders, the Jews that came down from New York and New Jersey that marched, and we have someone on TalkShoe who has a resistance program, and he was bragging to me, the only time I ever talked to him on the phone, that his mother came down to Mississippi in the 60s, and that she was in the marches, and that he was in a baby buggy being pushed by her in some of the resistant marches in Hattiesburg and Oxford and places in Mississippi. And he was bragging about that.
Mm.
Of course, he's Jewish, and I'm sure many of you know who I'm talking about.
Well, maybe you gentlemen can settle a discussion for me. Someone told me something. I forget who they said. They said that the KKK was started by, I forget what he told me now.
A Jew.
Yeah, so who was it started by?
Six former Confederate Army officers in Pulaski, Tennessee.
Wasn't it Pike?
He joined
later.
Right.
Albert, he told me Albert Pike.
Yeah, and a Jew, yeah.
I believe Albert Pike joined after the fact. It was founded by six largely anonymous Confederate war veterans in Pulaski, Tennessee. I believe they met in the conference room of a law office, or what is now a law office, and the plaque on the building has been turned around.
Well, that's the reason why I don't join any of these white nationalist groups. CI is such a perfect fit for me because I know that we don't have the bylaws of men. We have the Bible, and that is our sword, and that is what cuts between the truth and falsehoods, and that's what lets us know who our own brethren are. And you go into these white nationalist groups, and I wouldn't be surprised to find out that all of them aren't controlled by Jews.
Okay.
They're the controlled opposition.
Well, of course, in the South, had it not been for the formation of the Klan, which was made up mostly of ex-Confederate soldiers, the South probably would have never gotten off her knees and gotten control from the carpetbaggers and the Union people who had put the blacks in control of all the black legislatures throughout the South. And the Klan did a tremendous, of course, it was disbanded in 1874. But it did a tremendous service to the people of the South, particularly the ladies and all the people who were being persecuted. And one thing, we're talking about ladies, let me just mention this one thing since Patricia's on with us. You know, during the Civil after the Civil War and during the Reconstruction, when the Klan was at its strongest in the South, the women of the South, the mothers, the wives, the daughters, they made those material robes, and they made them many under the threat of death. And throughout that whole period, not one lady of the South ever betrayed a single individual who was fighting against the Reconstruction by being in the Klan. Not one lady. And I think that speaks tremendously of the womanhood of the South. I'm sorry, my southernness is coming through.
And if you guys believe Wiki Answers, the six founders, Calvin E. Jones, John B. Kennedy, Frank O. McCord, John C. Lester, Richard R. Reed, James R. Crow.
So why would a Jew, Albert Pike, want to be involved with the KKK?
He would probably join to hijack and derail it. Since he was a 33rd degree Illuminati Mason and he believed in Luciferian occultism, I'm sure he would want to lead the Klan down a degenerate path. The same reason we have folks out there like Jim the Jew who are trying to co-opt the movement and set themselves up as leaders, if not for profit, then for personal reasons or the agenda of Jewry.
But if you look at the MO, Pat, of how Jews have always operated, they've always controlled both sides.
Oh, exactly.
So That's how
Hegelian dialect.
They're able to guide any opposition, any legitimate opposition.
That's right. If you want to control the opposition, you've got to lead the opposition.
Exactly.
Well,
so,
that's why Christians, you know, should never ever believe a Jew, no matter what snake oil he's selling.
Exactly. And you know, with Christian identity, we don't have to worry about those things. We have the word, we have, and as Joshua said, by their fruits you will know them.
Well, that's why I suspected that Stormfront was a front organization, because they are so hostile to 2C-Blind identity.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I found that out the hard way.
And if they were for real, they would invite it.
Absolutely. I'd say based on analysis of pictures of top moderators and their behavior and their attitudes, John Joytree, the longstanding senior moderator, he is a Sephardic Jew. I will make that claim, and I will stake my reputation as an amateur physical anthropologist on that claim. I said to people that he is a Jew with some Portuguese ancestry, and then a few months later he admitted that he has Portuguese roots. He says that his mother is Portuguese, but he insists she's white. I don't know too many white people from Portugal, though.
No, I don't think so. That's
and I think it also speaks ill of his character that Don Black married David Duke's ex-wife, and his son goes skiing in Switzerland off of sustaining member donations. So Don Black is either just a patriot for profit, or he's somebody there who has an agenda, either his own personal private political agenda or an agenda he shares in common with his Jewish kin.
Yeah, I noted that Jews also, when they change their last name, they oftentimes pick a color.
Yeah, so maybe it was Donald Schwartz, Black.
That's a lot of the people in Europe with names that are colors,
mm-hmm,
are actually that represents the roles their families played in village festivals in the Middle Ages.
Well, that's an interesting tidbit, William.
Yeah, that's actually true. The greens and the browns and the blacks and the whites. Every village would have these festivals around, you know, a spring festival, a winter festival, and different families played different roles in these festivals. And they, when they took surnames, a lot of them took surnames that were actually after the parts they played in the festival.
Because surnames were, you know, kind of a recent thing historically, right?
Yes, and in Holland, in some countries, they didn't take surnames until the 1800s. And that's why so many about our, well, we see so many Anglo-Saxons or Saxon Germanic peoples with surnames that are actually, like Cooper. Cooper is a barrel maker. And
Smith.
A Farrington is a guy that puts horses, shoes on horses. And
well,
it's
Farrier.
A nice noble, yeah, Farrier, whatever. That, all these names are related to a, yeah, Smith is the obvious one, and Baker and Miller and
Goldstein, the man who takes your gold.
Yeah, Goldstein is the local jeweler that and pawn shop owner. the names are either after a hamlet or a grove or a town, and a lot of people with names that are after big cities are actually Jews.
You know, absolutely. William, I was very interested in coat of arms back many, many, many years ago, and I wanted to look up Moseley and see what the meaning was it. Well, I discovered that in England, the people that were named Moseley mostly took their names from the locality, which was a huge forest. It was called Moseley's Forest. And I was very excited until I realized that the name Moseley meant forest infiltrated with rats. Lost my enthusiasm at that point.
Oh, Jacko can take him.
Well, Jacko is somewhat intimidated by little field mouse. He'll come tell me that there's one in the house. There's not any around here, but he wants me to do something about it, but he won't attack them.
Oh, one thing, Bill. When you were in prison, this ties in with John Black before he moved too far away. How many people did you encounter that had numerous weapons violations, machine gun violations, explosive violations, conspiring to overthrow a foreign government, and they wind up out in 2 years?
Yeah, well, you know, that means that he ratted on somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that means he cooperated with the federal government. He ratted
on. And shortly after that debacle, when he went to jail for 2 years, he started Stormfront shortly after coming out. My guess is that they briefed him and they told him where they wanted him positioned and what he ought to do.
Well, I mean, And that's not too common from my personal experience, but it, usually if you get a sentence that's significantly below the mandatory minimums or the statutory guidelines for the crime, and most weapons offenses have a mandatory minimum of 10 years.
Yes, so
it usually means that you cooperated, and that your cooperation was significant in the assisting in the arrest and conviction of others.
So if they caught me with 10-plus machine guns, a crate full of hand grenades and bombs, a Nazi flag, and they found out that I was part of a plot to invade and overthrow the government of a Caribbean island, if I get anything under a 20-year sentence, something's fishy.
Oh, yeah, definitely. No doubt. Yeah, and if he was doing, if that was the charge, I would think that maybe Stormfront is a front. I know it's some sort of front, but I don't pay attention. I don't really care what kind of front it is or who's funding it. It's the place is no good. It's doing the work of the enemy, and it's a huge distraction, and that's why it exists. It exists because it gives people false hope and a false sense that they're actually accomplishing something when they're accomplishing nothing.
Yeah, that's why I love Christian Identity. I love my family, because I know that I'm with people that we have one leader, and his name is Yahshua.
Right, absolutely. And the people that reject him aren't worthy of him.
Yeah.
Well, that's what, you know, I mean, our flesh always wants to do something, always thinks it can make the difference. Always, you know, and that's what our flesh is. But Yahshua tells us that, you know, I mean, that he resists the proud but gives grace to the humble, and anything we do in our own strength is pride. So that's just keeping the curse going by being prideful and thinking that we can do something about things.
Yeah, I think the beast is far too widespread and far too inculcated in our society for us to even sanely think that we can do anything meaningful to get rid of it. This is going to be an act of God.
Well, that's what the scripture says.
Mm-hmm. And you know, it's like I keep on reminding people that whereas in the past we could pull up our roots and go somewhere else, we have run out of space. There's no place left for us to run. Now it's going to have to be up to God. It will have
well, we're
to
not
be
supposed to run anymore. I mean, okay, 2 Samuel 7:10. But I will establish a land for my people where they will move no more.
Exactly.
But it sure as hell wasn't talking about Palestine. We're not supposed to run anymore. But the nation won't be healed until the people realize what's going on and repent.
And it's certainly not going to happen as long as Judeo-Christianity, or what they call Christianity, is so prevalent in our society. That's such a poison that it actually has deluded people into thinking that they're good.
But didn't he say that in the last days even the very elect would be deceived?
If it were possible.
If it were possible.
Yeah. So, you know, I just thank Yahweh that I'm not deceived, and hope that, you know, and I have a strong family in Christ, that we're, you know, that we can help these people that are somewhat deceived or very deceived into seeing the truth. And I have seen it happen, but it's rare that a person that gets so deluded can actually find a way to open their eyes. They just think that they're doing the right thing. They think that they really love Yahweh, and they think that they are a follower of our Messiah, and they don't realize that they're so deluded.
They're into Baal worship.
Yeah, they don't see the need to change. And I just wonder, how can they not see? I mean, Yahshua said, by their fruits you will know them. How can they not see that the Jews are thoroughly and completely corrupt and satanic?
Well, I always ask people, you know, especially Judeo-Christians, you know, the Bible says that if you bless Israel, that, you know, all that, you know. And I say, well, we've been blessing that criminal, you know, occupation of Palestine for 50 years to the tune of $10 million a day. Has our country improved because of it?
Exactly. Exactly.
And they say, well, there's choice about it. And I go, well, you can't have it both ways. It's one or the other.
Yeah, or Yahweh's a liar.
Exactly.
And I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. Well, I do know what the answer is. The answer is Yahweh himself. But I don't know exactly how to reach these people. You have to just take them on an individual basis and try to work with them as best you can, and to work with them not in groups. I found it's better to work with them as individuals, because if you try and work with them in groups, there's always inevitably that one person who is a rabid Zionist, and they're going to keep on pulling against everything that you try to say and pulling the others along with them.
Good point, James. Yeah, I think it's very interesting what reaches people. You know, I through Wendy's listening, man, I sent her tract after tract. I mean, all kinds of stuff. I talk to her about it all the time because, you know, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. When I first, you know, learned about the lost tribes, who they really were, I couldn't stop talking about it. And she didn't get it. She wasn't interested, couldn't hear it. But as soon as I told her that that the Bible says that blacks are beasts. Oh my gosh, she got it. She got it.
Yeah.
It now she's in. Right, Wendy?
Is Wendy here?
Yeah, she's not on the line though. She'll end up coughing if she calls in.
Oh, how's she doing?
She's still struggling with this thing. She's questioning our friendship, coming all the way out here and exposing herself to this stuff, and then we poisoned her with pizza and all kinds of stuff when she got here, so we weren't very good friends. Kept her up late.
Don't let that try your faith, Wendy. Make it strengthen your faith.
Well, he makes us lie down in green pastures, so just have a good rest.
And talking about blacks being beasts, and to backtrack a bit about how the black women are aggressive unless you show them who's boss. I remember as a young boy, I must have been maybe 8 or 9, possibly 10, not much older though, my father and I were coming out of a shopping mall, and it was in the summertime, and there was a black woman inappropriately dressed for the season. She was wearing a big bulky coat. She had big bags, one under each arm, and she's walking out looking around in some plain clothes. Mall detectives are approaching her. She pushes by one of them, drops the bag, and starts running. She runs for a nearby state route, and she gets up over a hill, past an incline, and then a cop car pulls up. City police officer jumps out. He immediately draws his gun. He's pointed at her, screaming, "Get on the ground now." And she immediately just went right to the ground. I just thought it was wonderful.
Yeah, it's always nice to see a black person get on the ground like they're supposed to.
Apparently she thought she could just walk out with bag after bag and a coat full of goodies.
Yeah.
Well, and that no one was going to...
Look at what they did in Hurricane Katrina. I mean, I've never seen anything like that in my life. And I grew up in some predominantly black areas, so... Once they see an opportunity, they just feed like vultures. They're kind of like Jews, but without the intelligence.
Well, there are several shopping malls in the area. Some were in largely black counties, and those have all since closed over the last 5 to 10 years. They all closed due to, quote, persistent shoplifting, theft, vandalism, and other crime.
Look at the problem with Detroit with the supermarkets right now. There aren't any supermarkets in Detroit.
And they're complaining that they're being taken advantage of in the local corner stores since they have to go to a Quickie Mart to buy their groceries.
Well, if they didn't rape the Walmart, they'd have one.
Well, I remember they had, when I had lived in Virginia, there was a town or a city called Petersburg, and right next to it was one called Colonial Heights. Colonial Heights was predominantly white and did not have a mall, and Petersburg was predominantly black and they did have a mall. And they ended up closing the mall in Petersburg because of the theft and vandalism. And they opened a new one up in Colonial Heights. And the blacks were screaming racism and all this kind of stuff. They opened one in a white neighborhood, but you don't want to open one in a black neighborhood and this, that, and the other. So they boycotted the mall. And people thought that was wonderful. They thought it was wonderful. You could go in there, you could see nothing but whites as far as the eye could see. And it was always packed. Then I guess the blacks realized they couldn't carry off their boycott, that it was working against them. So they called off the boycott, and then they started flooding in, and all the whites left. And within a few months, there was all kinds of vandalism, shoplifting. And at one point, they were talking about closing the mall. The mall owners ended up selling to some outfit in North Carolina. They sent in extra security. And then it never was the same again. You could not go in that mall without, you could feel the difference was palpable, and they never were able to recover.
In Jersey, these black youths used to rate that they'd descend on a mall and they'd all be wearing these huge, puffy coats. And they would leave and their coats would be looted padded with stash.
Mm-hmm.
That they wouldn't buy anything. They would just shoplift all day.
So when the blacks threatened to boycott a mall, they said, "What you going to do if we don't come to your mall? I guess we'll lay off all the security guards because they won't have anything to do."
Yeah, basically.
Well, Maui's the same way, I think. It was they opened a Kmart there. Almost been about 10 years ago now. and there was such a commotion in the store. There was shoplifting going on. They had to close the store, have everybody leave single file, and then let people back in at controlled access because there was so much shoplifting going on.
Oh, yeah.
And I guarantee it wasn't the Hollies who was shoplifting.
Well, it never is. I mean, rarely it is, but usually they're probably crypto Jew. But the whole meaning of the scripture when it says that the laws of Yahweh are written into our very being. And it's part of us. We don't participate in the things that the beasts of the field do.
Right. Basically, all that means is that we naturally know the difference between right and wrong.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely evident in history and in anthropology. It's absolutely evident.
And again, I believe this goes back to genetics. I really think that the genetic code that's within us is that law. It is those ideas. It is the way that we believe, the way we feel. And even if we grew up in a vacuum.
Well, it's the genetic, the genes produce the spirit.
Yeah, exactly. And
Paul says in 1 Corinthians 15 that we're sown a physical seed and raised a spiritual seed. And the only thing that could portend is that the spirit was coded into, the spirit of Yahweh was coded into the genetics of Adam.
Yeah, I read on a website one time where it talks in Revelation, the white stone on which is written the name that only he himself can know, that white stone being a cell within the body and the writing of the name being that genetic code.
Well, that might be, and I don't like to go there because it's conjecture because I haven't seen it. You know what I mean?
I know, but I just thought it was interesting that we have that innate belief system. I don't know what you'd want to call it, but I believe that even if we were raised in a vacuum, we would still be the same people with the same beliefs.
That's what makes white non-churchgoers, people that reject Christianity, let me put it this way, people that reject churchianity.
Yeah,
I mean,
I'm one of them. I could never reject the idea of a creator. And I read a lot of books. I mean, Stephen Hawking, Brief History of Time, Carl Sagan, Cosmos. And I read the books, but I couldn't buy it. I couldn't buy the evolution thing, and I couldn't, even though I couldn't buy the Catholicism thing.
Well,
and
so
you're right.
People would say, well, you know, I'm a good, and that's the evangelicals, you know, argue with people saying, oh, just because you're good, you know, good people don't go to heaven, you know, forgiven people go to heaven, you know, and that's what they lay out to them. But I mean, I think. Those people have made a great point that they have the spirit in them. Like this,
well, right.
Ingrid was complaining about someone who's, and she just can't get her. She goes, but he doesn't have any Christian spirit. I mean, she uses that word, and I go, well, why do you think that is? Well, because he's a mixed race person, girl. You know,
yes.
He can't have it.
Anybody
that we see that we think there, it's just a manipulation on their part. They're just role playing, they're just acting.
Well, I talk
to
people
fit in your society.
I've talked to people that say that they don't, that they're not a Christian, you know, and that they don't believe in all that religious stuff.
And they're better Christians than most of the Christians.
And they'll say, but I don't believe in stealing, and I don't believe in killing other people, and I don't believe in robbing, and I don't believe in lying. And I'll say, well, there you go. You know, you have in you. It is part of your makeup. It's part of who you are. And that's what it means by having the law written in your heart.
That's it. And I also believe that it's primarily genetic. There's no doubt.
But I have to say, when Yahweh reeled me in, I had a supernatural experience with him, and I was a changed person. I did have that born-again experience. All of a sudden, I was open to the Bible, where I'd been hostile to it, and, you know, all those things. I read the Bible cover to cover before I ever went to church, though.
You didn't flop on the floor and speak in tongues, did you? No.
No. No.
I think it was similar for me. I was sort of being pulled between two, you know, it was sort of like the Elijah thing. How long shall you be pulled between two opinions? I was certainly racialized, but I thought that Christianity couldn't be racist, and that I was trying to reconcile a lot of things, and I actually had experiences of, I would say, demons were attacking me, and for just some reason, I shot at the first thing that came to my mind, and that was, oh, God of Abraham and God of Jacob, protect me. It somehow resonated with me that was my God, and I started to realize that the Jews are not the people of the Old Testament, whereas I previously thought they were. So it was hard for me, you know, for years to hate the Jews, thinking they're the people of the Old Testament, but at the same time I knew that they're the Illuminati, they're the bankers, they're the communists, they're all these disgusting, wicked things that they're out there doing, but how can they be the people of the Old Testament? No one explained it to me. So it took me a while to get it, you know, it didn't sink in yet. And then some people pointed me to Wesley Swift, Compa Ray, Eli James, and Dan Johns, and then everything came together.
Well, you know, it's funny because if you talk to people that are racially aware and you talk to people that really know what's up with the Jews, they still bought into that lie that the Jews are the Israelites of old and everything. And they'll talk about, how could I love a God that's so hateful that he'd kill every man and woman, or advocate killing every man, woman, and child, and bringing up Old Testament scripture. And I say, okay, now think about this. It was your forefathers who were the Israelites. And the people that Yahweh wanted us to kill, or wanted them to kill, were the children of Cain. They are the ones you call the Jews today. Now, these are the ones that you wish were dead now. Don't you wish our forefathers had actually followed Yahweh's instructions?
Absolutely.
And then their eyes kind of light up. It's like, oh, okay, now I get it. So Yahweh wasn't all that bad, you know.
Well, since Yahweh could, of course, see the future, since it's his universe, he knew exactly what we would go through. So he told our forefathers, kill these people. You have the chance. Kill them. Slay them all. And our forefathers basically failed. They dropped the ball, and here we are today.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, my friend, one of those people that, well, I can believe the New Testament, but I don't believe that angry, vengeful God of the Old Testament. And, you know, and she really told on herself, after, you know, because she admitted to me after she watched the They Live video, you know, that, mm-hmm. that she was secretly, like, going, yes, when he kills the alien woman at the end, you know, it gets there and stuff. So she said, yeah. And I said, see, I mean, how is that different from Deuteronomy?
Exactly.
I said, where's that different, you know? And so she was stopped in her tracks when I said that. They said, because we've been brainwashed that they're people, that they're equal to us when they're not.
Yeah. I wish we did have those magical sunglasses, though.
I know. If you come across a box of those, James, would you send me one?
I am going to send everyone in Christian Identity one.
Excellent. I know. I want to read those billboards better.
Exactly. I'm going to be heading
no
back to...
No cultural context for any of this. I'm lost. That's okay.
Oh, Bill, I'm telling you, treat yourself to a great movie.
It's
well,
not
watch
going
They
to
Live.
Happen, Patricia.
What?
It's not going to happen.
Oh.
You're
no,
right.
You are a workaholic.
I'm not going to watch a movie. If I was going to do something upstairs, I would sit and read a book. And I have four books that have been sitting up there since January. They're still unread.
Well, I don't recommend a lot of movies, but I think this one is worthwhile. Wendy will chime in. She sent it to me. Okay, everybody in the forum, if you think They Live is worthwhile, now's your time to vote here.
Well,
Bill,
if you
think you should read it.
Bill, in the package I'm sending off to you soon, I've got America Under Attack on the Frankfurt School, the House of Rothschild DVD, because you said you would get it up on your site,
And if you're interested, I will burn you a copy of They Live and include it in there, and you can do what you want with it.
Yeah, okay, but I probably won't watch it.
Oh, Wendy says They Live is fabulous. It really is.
Well, you know, it kind of boils down to this, all right? For years, people try to shove a novel down my throat, and I tell them I don't read novels. And they're like, well, you got to read this novel because this is a great novel. This novel's the one or whatever. And I tell them, what don't you understand about I don't read novels? And basically, I'm the same way with movies. I'm not going to watch the movie. I'll watch a documentary movie, maybe.
Well, this is kind of a documentary.
except for the fact that he works with a black guy.
Yeah, well, they had to throw that in. They had to throw that in. Never mind, Bill. Never mind.
I probably don't want it.
I'll tell you a movie that was kind of interesting to me was Dune, and I'm talking about the original one, not the remake. That was a pretty interesting movie.
I kind of remember it vaguely. Tell me about it again, James.
That was where, and I haven't seen it in years, so I'm just recalling from memory. A guy who was a prince with his dad over a planet that was mostly water, and they ended up going to a planet that was that they had taken over from
the House Atreides. Went to the planet Arrakis, which was a barren desert world, and it was the son of Duke Leo Atreides, Paul Atreides, and I thought the acting was atrocious in the original one. I thought it was. It was abysmal. It got a.
I think it's scary that you know so much about this movie.
You thought the acting was bad in the original?
I thought it was atrocious. And there's the fat baron of House Harkonnen. They're conspiring to take the planet. He wants to kill the emperor. And this planet is the only planet where the spice comes from. And they need this for the Space Guild people, the navigators. They take it, and they're able to navigate through the warp. So interstellar commerce is only possible so long as the spice flows from this planet. And there's a conspiracy with the Empire and this House Harkonnen to kill House Atreides. He winds up having to flee into the wilderness, where he is considered a messiah and a prophet by these desert-dwelling Fremen, these people that have very deep, glowing blue eyes, and they're very skilled in hand-to-hand combat. He marshals an army of these people, and they basically end up using his name as their battle cry. They go into battle, and they slaughter the Empire's best soldiers, and they destroy House Harkonnen. And then he ends up ruling over the planet.
Wow.
That's the movie in a nutshell.
And you thought the acting was atrocious in the original. I thought it was atrocious in the
James, you're getting some feedback from Pilgrim. She says she can't hear you. You need to speak up a little bit, or Bill needs to adjust your volume somehow.
Okay. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
The talk show volume is not adjusted. I can't adjust his volume. I would adjust my own because everybody complains that they can't hear me, and that's why I got myself used to yelling into the telephone.
Well, James is so soft-spoken.
I was just going to say, from the books and from the movies, I could have done a better screenplay in my sleep.
Daryl, I'm only that way with my kin's people. You should hear me when I'm talking to a nigger or a Jew.
Oh.
Well, Robert's on the line. Let me tell you, he the gentleman that interviewed me for ProSync a couple of weeks ago. Robert, what's happening?
Oh, not too much. I came in a little late. I was out entertaining tonight. I had a couple of guests at the house. But I think they got the shock of their life on the way back from the restaurant when I told them that the Jews were the son of Satan. So, well, that went over.
Going out. You probably won't be eating with them again, is that what you're saying?
Well, we'll see tomorrow. But when I can't take it when people bring up this holohoax stuff. That just is such complete nonsense. It just drives me completely crazy to think of how many of our kinsmen were killed by those Jews. And they're whining and crying about a couple of them being killed by their own people.
I'd say they just killed approximately 100 million of our people in Russia alone, or in the former Soviet Union alone, at least 100 million.
Oh, at least, yeah. There's no doubt about that. And it's and now, you know, I heard you talking about the Ukraine a little earlier. curiously enough, I got an email this morning that was claiming that the whole country was locked down. You couldn't get in or out. I don't know if anybody got an email like that.
Yeah, I've been following that.
I believe that Ukraine is under martial law.
Just to find out what was really going on, and that actually is not true.
Oh, good. What is true, Bob?
I called over there. I called my friend Gunter Prebster in Germany, who goes over to the Ukraine all the time, and they were planning a trip. And right now, their government in the Ukraine is kind of making it a big deal, like Obama's declaring a national medical emergency here in the United States. Well, they're declaring a national medical emergency over there. But in actuality, the flu deaths are really no more than they've been in the past. But there are a lot of people who are scared because it's been on the TV and there's been a lot of publicity. But they're actually ready to reopen the schools again. And there hasn't been that much chaos from what he has told me. I don't have complete firsthand knowledge because I haven't been over there, but that kind of got me rolling this morning when I look at that, because there's an awful lot of emails that come in claiming different things, and that one, at least I could verify to some point, is not true from the reports I personally got.
Oh, good. Glad to hear that.
Yeah, I am too.
I was going to talk to my hairdresser. She's from Ukraine. I wanted to hear what kind of report she's been getting.
Yeah, that would be interesting also. I was glad to hear that too, because I'm thinking, oh my goodness, here we go again and no one's going to do anything.
Wendy's asking, what about the black lung? Yeah, Wendy saw that report in Iowa, that hemorrhagic, lung disease.
I personally don't know anything about that. I also saw an email on that one, but I the only one was able to verify was the Ukrainian one.
Well, I just hate to say that I'm very skeptical about everything I hear, because the fear mongers take advantage of every little situation.
Well, they make a lot of money off their fear mongering. I get lots of your emails from fear mongers, and they're always asking for donations.
I could become a professional fear monger. Sword Brethren's latest DVD, Blowing the Lid Off the New World Order in the Caribbean, Blowing the Lid Off the New World Order in the Pacific Northwest, The New World Order Strikes Again in New England, Get Ready for Total Martial Law, buy my latest DVD.
Oh, we'll just call you Alex Jones.
Right. We have our clowns like Alex Jones, and they're always going to be here. But the thing that upsets me is how many people in Christian identity would rather listen and give all that credence to clowns like Alex Jones.
Now, I'll admit I have most of his DVDs and movies, but I bought them in 2002, 2003, 2004, and he covers some good stuff, but it eventually gets old. You know, martial law is coming in 2001, get ready. And then it doesn't happen, so he's like a rapture guy, recalculates. Martial law is coming in 2003, get ready. And then he has 2000, police state, 2004, total police state, 2006, Bush Cheney are going to take over, this is going to happen. And it comes and goes, and the next thing you know, it's the flavor of the month.
It's
the flavor of the month, and there's one gaping hole in all of his stories.
Jewelry.
He leaves out the Jew.
Absolutely.
And when he gets called on it, he'll bring it up every so often just to cover himself. But then he goes back to it's the elite and that stupid bullhorn, we're not afraid of you. It's so ridiculous.
Well, I heard
the guy is a total ass.
I heard a recording of Michael Delaney calling to Alex Jones. And Mike didn't say anything untoward. He just asked a question. I forget what the question is offhand, but Alex Jones fell all over himself to try to I don't want to say to lace Mike out or what, or you're that clown at this, you're that clown at that, whatever. It was Alex Jones made a total ass out of himself, and Mike was being a total gentleman.
Well, I heard one recording where Alex Jones said, and this is basically an exact quote, Hollywood is owned by Arabs. So when I heard that, I knew once and for all that guy is no good. He maintains that a Saudi cabal runs the media and owns Hollywood, and that Islamists are conspiring to dominate the world.
Oh, boy. Oh, no, it's not Islamists. Come on, no. SB, you know better than that. It's the Anglo-American Consortium. That's David Icke says.
That's the David Icke spin.
Or
it's everybody but the Jews. And the Jews finance all these whacked out conspiracy theories.
Controlled opposition.
The London banking cartel. Or they'll use the phrase London banking cartel, but they won't tell you who owns the cartel and whose hands is this cartel. They won't just call it the Jewish Rothschild banking cartel.
Exactly. Well, gentlemen, I've enjoyed our conversation this evening. I've got to go accomplish something here. But, yeah, bless everyone. Thanks for the chat. Love it. Thanks.
Thank you.
See you guys soon. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, the way I look at it, if somebody points out that your house is on fire, but they don't tell you how to put out the fire, and they don't tell you who's responsible for the fire, are they really doing you any sort of service?
No, Alex Jones, I think he's a clown. I have no problem saying that.
I mean, I can go outside.
He makes money from being a clown, too.
Yeah, he does make a lot of money being a clown.
I could go outside and see society falling apart. I don't need to spend $15 on one of his DVDs, particularly when he doesn't name names and he won't give us any viable solutions.
Well, I always suspect anybody that's able to go out on a street in New York City or anywhere near the Bilderbergers and use a blowhorn and or anybody who's able to do any sort of aggressive act or something like that anywhere near these Jewish elite and get away with it. You know
yes.
I mean?
How did he sneak into the Bohemian Club and he just walked around with a camera filming it all, yet there was somebody who was preparing to launch an assault on the Bohemian Club. They caught him with a carbine, a pistol, a machete, and several other tools, and I think some improvised bombs. His plan was to assault the Bohemian Grove and kill as many elitists as he could.
Hmm.
But they caught him pretty quick. Maybe he trusted the wrong person.
Yeah, he told Alex Jones what his plan was.
And several people, the names elude me. They've gone on the Alex Jones show. He said that you'll be perfectly safe, come on. And they go on the show. And then within a week, they've turned up dead or missing or arrested.
Yeah.
I wish
that Bohemian Grove was pretty
good. But it was pretty good.
What was pretty good?
Well, when Delaney called into to Alex Jones, I wish I could remember specifically what it was about, but it was pretty good. And Jones just made a total fool out of himself. Looked like a total asshole.
Well, Mike was just stating exactly his website. So he was able to get his website on the air, and I think that really torqued off Alex.
Right, it did. And I think it's because Mike's website basically tells you who is behind it. And I think that's what torques off Alex.
So his website makes Jones's website superfluous and obsolete. Is there a market? Bill, would you prefer a Sword Brethren signed jacket, hooded sweater, T-shirt, or a baseball cap?
Yeah.
Isn't Alex married to a Jewess?
Yes.
I've heard that also.
And he has some banking connections himself.
Well, there's no doubt to me that he's part of the problem and not he's never going to be part of the solution.
He admits that he has Cherokee ancestry. He wears it as a badge of honor, and he points it out whenever someone tries to call him racist.
Oh, so he's a Mamzer.
Yes.
Oh, well, there you go.
And he does cover some interesting things about martial law training, but he doesn't do anything that anybody else couldn't do. And what he refrains from doing is telling us who's behind it, what the driving forces are, and what the viable solutions would happen to be.
Well, so he's really no better than Michael Savage.
He's basically just Michael Savage.
Or any televangelist, Judeo-anti-Christian.
Basically.
And people like Alex Jones, they put out these theories that Christian identity is just some government front, and we're here to destabilize the country so the elites can justify a martial law police state by pointing to our actions. And that was something that a certain New World Order front author known as Eileen Johnson put out in one of her latest emails, that we are involved in guns trafficking, espionage, and narcotics trafficking out of some airport in Arkansas. And she said that
Bill and I are apparently CIA operatives. Well,
next Sunday we have a surprise for Arlene Johnson.
Absolutely.
Oh, good. And I won't. I have to work. Damn.
Boy, it'll be archived.
I'll have it on the website.
I know. I always listen to the archives, but I like being on the chat too.
I just like to say, boy, if I was on the CIA payroll, that would be the end of my money woes. But, for working for the CIA, they're forgetting to send me my paychecks.
Exactly.
I need to call them. I need to call them tomorrow and say, hey, I've been working for you for years. Where's my money?
Next Sunday's program on the Voice of Christian Israel is going to be about TrueDemocracy.net.
Yeah.
It's going to be all about. That's the topic of discussion for next Sunday's program. I haven't announced it yet officially, but. The topic of the discussion is True Democracy Done.
Well, I read that email by Arlene, and then Lily kind of really set it straight.
Well, Eli's taking next Sunday off, and as long as I could get my son out of here by noon, which I think I'm fairly confident I'll be able to do, because he's coming in Thursday night, and I haven't seen him in 8 years, and I hate to cut him short, I'm definitely doing Saturday evening show with Pastor Visser, with my son here. And I'm doing... As I should be able to get him out of here by noon because he has to work Monday and he's in Quantico, it's a 7-hour drive.
Yeah.
And I'm doing a Sunday program off the cuff with Sword Brethren, and we're going to talk about TrueDemocracy.net.
Yeah, we're doing our regularly scheduled Sunday Germany and the Jewish Problems till at 9, right?
Yes.
All right.
And we're going to talk about TrueDemocracy.net. We're going to show how Arlene Johnson is a Marxist whore.
Well, the so-called patriots... They attack identity when we are basically the only productive movement out there. We're the only association/affiliation of people that are helping people to form a proper Weltanschauung, a worldview that embraces both scripture, conspiracy, and politics. It brings it all together. We help them see the entire picture. That's why we're coming under attack, because we are successful.
Exactly. We are coming under attack precisely for that reason. And I think we make a lot of headway in with racially aware people until we come to the point where you really have to trust Yahweh. That is where they kind of seize up. They just can't see turning your trust over. And, they think that they have to take an action. And really the only action we have to take is to trust.
Well, to me, that's the Dan Johns Let's Take Babylon Back crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot more than him, but I have to. I get nothing but political email from him, and I think it's disgusting that people in identity trust so much in politics.
Or in themselves.
And think that politics is the solution. Or in themselves,
oh,
right.
That's certainly.
Absolutely right.
Certainly, though, Dan is well-versed in Scripture, and I don't believe we could fault him for that. I think maybe he's just hopeful that there may be some improvement in this society, and he's optimistic, perhaps wrongly so. But I won't fault him for hoping for the best.
Yeah, well, I use him as an example, and it's unfair, but he's not the only one. I get the same stuff from several other. Robert Balassi is always sending me political stuff, and several other identity ministers. And it doesn't, it's there's no political solution. That's the bottom line.
Well, I think in terms of advocating for a better society, there's nothing we can do on a national level. All we can do is try and keep our own affairs in order, help our brothers on an individual, personal level, and try and see that our children have a proper upbringing so they can survive in an increasingly dangerous, violent, and hostile world.
To me, our duty is to point out the evil in society to our brethren, whether they want to hear it or not. That's the duty.
And like I've told others, if there does come a point where we have to act, believe me, we're going to know it. It's going to be an unmistakable call to act. And that's when we're going to know the time has come. If that time comes, it's not going to be something where we're going to be wondering. That isn't how Yahweh works. When he wants people to act, and you can look at it all throughout the Old and New Testament, when he wants us to act, it's unmistakable. It's an unmistakable call to act.
Well, that's absolutely true. And when he wants people to act, it's going to be successful whether you have five people or 500,000 involved in it.
Exactly.
Or one person or 10 million.
It's quality, not quantity.
Keep in mind the National Socialists under the auspices of the German Labor Party, which later grew into the National Socialist German Workers Party, they only had seven members at the time Hitler joined. He was the seventh, wasn't he?
Yes. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't really the National Socialist Workers Party yet.
Okay, but it grew into it later, didn't it?
Well, yeah, it grew into it, sort of. That's how he got his start, but he really just kind of usurped it and renamed it and basically he reformed the party that he joined, the fledgling party that he joined.
Because they really had no cemented, solidified platform, did they?
No, it really didn't have it. The same, you know, the people had the general idea, but they didn't have a solid outline or schematic for what they wanted to do. That,
so
they didn't even have, you know, most people don't have their own political philosophy well defined. And Hitler had his political philosophy precisely defined. And he just rose to a, you know, through his natural leadership and the thought that he had given us, he just sort of rose to the occasion.
So these people, the German Labor Party, they knew there was a problem. They just didn't really know how to tackle the problem.
Well, exactly. And he knew how to tackle the problem, and he knew what it would take. And basically assumed a natural default leadership position because of that. That's the way I see it, from what I read of Mein Kampf.
I have to get back to that. I have to finish that up.
I hope you're reading the Murphy translation.
I'm reading the one you have on your site.
Okay. I actually have the hardcover book that is the same version.
Is it an original or is it a reprint?
It's a reprint.
Locally reprint.
Now, where in prison would I get an original?
I've heard you can get anything in prison.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're a zillionaire, if you're a nigger drug dealer.
Bill, I found a booklet that was printed in Germany in 1940, which tells about the Polish attack upon the German citizens and what atrocities they did to them. And it has a lot of very brutal pictures in it. Would you be interested if I can get it scanned to put it on your site?
Yeah, of course I would be.
Well, I think it's a very interesting book, a very good book, because a lot of people I saw in the chat room a couple of days ago, someone wanted to know why Hitler declared war on Poland. And I think that's a very good story people need to know about.
Mm-hmm. Well, people also had to realize that the Poles attempted to seize Upper Silesia in the Weimar years, in the early years of the Weimar Republic, when Germany was weak and helpless, and the Bavarian socialists and communists were rising up to declare the Bavarian Soviet Republic in Munich. The Poles also saw their chance, and they tried to evict all the Germans in Upper Silesia, and if it were not for the Freikorps, the Poles would have succeeded. So the Freikorps saved Germany in regards to territorial integrity, and they saved Germany in regards to political stability. They kicked the Marxists out of Bavaria, and they hanged and shot plenty of them. Sadly, though, not enough, since they tried it again and again and again. But I think we need to make people aware that Weimar Germany was a civil war. It was a nation existing in perpetual civil war, incessant conflict. And it was by design. The Treaty of Versailles assured that Germany would have no military force capable of maintaining law and order in the face of communist insurrection.
That's a good point.
Would you agree, Bill, Gerald,
yeah, that's,
gentlemen?
That's just about what happened. There was all kinds of agitation by the Poles on the German frontier for many years.
Like the victorious Western powers of World War I, they forced a peace on Germany, fully intending that Germany would become the next Soviet Union.
They wanted the next Bolshevik revolution to happen in Germany, so they stripped Germany of all means of self-defense.
Mm.
You think that's a correct assessment?
Mm-hmm.
Gentlemen, I'm going to have to close off because I have to get the line clear. But it's nice talking to all of you. Y'all bless everybody.
James, when is your time at moderation on the Tuesday program?
December the 5th.
Okay. Tomorrow night is R.P. Wake.
Yep, I plan on listening to it. I haven't had a day off in 4 weeks, so I haven't been able to listen for the last couple of weeks. I'm finally getting my days off, so, yeah, I will be listening tomorrow.
Great.
I would encourage everyone else to tune in also.
What time is that tomorrow?
7 o'clock Central.
Mm-hmm. 8 o'clock your time.
I'm sorry. That's right. Well,
Ohio,
it is getting late.
Ohio is Eastern time.
Okay.
But he was right. He said 7 Central.
Yeah, it is 7 Central.
So it'll be 8 Eastern.
Right. All Bill's right. Trying to confuse me.
All right, guys. Good night.
God bless. God bless. Take care.
Well, I'm going to follow his example, gentlemen. I'm going to have to retire. Jocko is demanding I go to bed. So I wish everybody Yahweh bless, and I will see y'all tomorrow night on R.P. Wake's program.
All right. Yahweh bless.
Yahweh bless.
Bill, before I hang up, I did get a telephone call from the gentleman in Alabama and had a nice conversation with him.
Oh, okay, great.
So we'll see what goes from there. Good night.
Take care, girl. Bless you slightly.
I may have to leave soon, too, since it's probably been 6 or 7 hours since I've had anything to eat.
Well, it's already 12:30 in the morning. I mean, is anybody else here? Is Robert still here? Robert's still here and...
Yeah, I'm still here. You know, Bill, I had a question.
Sure.
I don't remember what gentleman it was the other night, but there were a couple of, I guess, elderly gentlemen in their 80s or something.
Were there?
That
I don't
were
know.
Working on, it was mentioned during the program. They weren't on the program, I think a week ago, that we're working on some alternative energy projects.
Oh,
do you remember
that
who that was that mentioned?
Yeah, that was... Russ Wake, the R.P. Wake is going to have them on, I think, tomorrow at 8 o'clock.
Oh, he is?
I believe so, here at 8 p.m. Yes, sir.
Okay. Well,
not here, but on the Crystal Leos call at 8 p.m.
What are their alternate energies? What are they based upon?
I don't know. That's what I would like to know.
I know my mom's father has given about $10,000 to some local quack inventor who claims that he has an engine that's either going to run off of hydrogen or water or the hydrogen from water, and he says that they're all going to be billionaires, and he's giving him X amount of shares in some flim-flam company, and my grandfather thinks that he's going to quadruple his money in, you know, hours, and then it'll quadruple again and again and again, and he'll retire to some island.
Well, I know there are a lot of garage, you know, inventors that are trying to perfect these hydrogen cells.
Mm.
I know that. I know one that got out of prison just before I did, and we were in prison together, and he laid out his whole plan to me. Told me how he was going to separate the hydrogen from the oxygen and everything.
You think there's any validity to it?
Well, there's definitely validity to the fuel cell technology. There's no doubt. But if it's ever going to be efficient enough to produce on the fly, like to separate, you have to separate the hydrogen from the oxygen, the hydrogen atoms from the oxygen atom in the molecule. So you're actually breaking the water molecule apart. And then you're putting it back together. And as the hydrogen atom, you know, moves down the coil, the oxygen atom is I think, waste. And the hydrogen atom, it somehow becomes water again at the end of the process. So that your waste is water.
So it'll just continue to fuel itself. It'll be perpetual.
Basically, yeah.
Doesn't that fly in the face of the laws of thermodynamics?
Well, that sounds like a skip to me, because all the processes I've seen that have split water and then put it back together again, including using larger formers, are all pretty inefficient.
And that's exactly the key, is getting the water split. And
see, I don't think that's the kind of technology I'm looking at. That, to me, sounds ordinary.
He actually believes that radio frequency could do it. And that was the key. I don't know. I don't know.
There's two technologies that I've been looking at.
I'm not a physicist.
I got a couple people that have been working with that seem to be consistent about a number of these inventors. And I'm kind of curious, because if you get someone who's really honest about this, maybe someone can put it together and I can get it out there.
I'll be curious
to see what these guys say.
But Russ, I'm going to say for Russ, you know, that he seems like a pretty intelligent guy, and I think that it might be an interesting program, you know?
Maybe I should tell my grandfather to tune in before he sinks any more money with some quack.
Yeah, quite honestly, the what you're describing there with the fuel cell technology, I've done fuel cell technology for quite a while, and I don't see anything promising there at all.
Well, right.
I mean,
and
it is
only,
more
you know,
efficient.
I'm just a layperson. I don't know anything about it at all. I'm just, you know, trying to explain the little bit I know about it. I think there's something to it, but I'm no expert. I'm not a physicist. I'm not an engineer.
The hydrogen fuel cells in themselves, if you just go with the hydrogen fuel cell, are pretty efficient from the hydrogen on, but most of the stuff has to be reformed.
Right.
Either have to use diesel fuel or some kind of methanol or ethanol.
Well,
and that requires a reform on the front end.
And that's a very basic. Energy and matter can never be destroyed or created. It can only be converted from one medium to another.
And that's
where I think the crucial aspect is that there's a lot of energy in the universe that's already there. It's just not being tapped.
Right.
It's not a matter of creating or destroying energy or creating or destroying matter. It's being able to utilize what's already available out there.
Well, I mean, if you make a little spinning wheel and you have a cat or a person running in the wheel to power the wheel to turn a turbine to power a house, you still have to feed that person food, and that food either comes from another animal that's eating grass that gets energy from sunlight. So, I mean, ultimately, there's nothing new. You're not creating any new energy.
There's anything new with what we'll call zero-point energy or cold fusion. I don't believe any of that. It's just that, just like we couldn't see the fact that radio waves travel through the air, you can only see light because that was visible to the eye, or radiation, you can't see that, but it does affect you.
Mm-hmm.
There's other stuff out there that you aren't able to tap because you simply don't know that it's there.
Absolutely.
I have to agree that just because we can't perceive something doesn't mean that we can't learn it and master it.
I'm convinced that it is there because there's a certain amount of people that pop up every once in a while and then disappear. And right now, the way the economy is set up with the fuel oil and all this trading, and it's parasitic. The whole system's parasitic. The freedom that you would enable to the individual who had the capability of producing energy on their own is way beyond what of course, the Jew wants to happen in the world. Can you imagine how freeing that technology would be if you didn't have to pay for fuel in your automobile anymore? You didn't need fuel for your house?
Well, I'd be worried if I were an inventor on the verge of a breakthrough that the gas companies would send a hit team, you know?
Well, I'm sure that that's the case.
Well, there's all kinds of rumors, but I think what's happening
now is we have a sort of a breakdown of stuff, and there's so many people that are approaching these from different angles at different spots in the world that the probability is that one of these things is going to make it somewhere. And when it does, people just have to be prepared.
Well, gentlemen, my phone is...
I have the capability of getting something out there like that. I tell you, I would do it fast.
Yeah, of course.
My phone will probably die in the next 15 minutes, so I'm going to have to go in a minute. Heads up, in case I'm suddenly booted off and I'm not hanging up on everybody.
Okay.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting program. I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to keep my mouth shut during it because I'm not a physicist, but I'm looking forward to it.
Where did he say they live? Is it close by, somewhere near you, or?
Well, yeah, he's relatively from where you are. It's somewhere near me. It's in it's in Ohio or Michigan or in that area. I don't know exactly.
I was looking where you live, and that's really not that far from where I am on the East Coast. Right in that Westchester area. It's straight up the northeast extension of the Turnpike, up 81. You're really not far from me at all.
The East Coast.
Yeah.
Are you near Toledo, Russ?
No. I thought he was in California.
Oh, I am right now.
Okay.
But I'll be back on the East Coast in 2 weeks.
And where will you be?
Westchester, Pennsylvania.
That's not. I'm 2 hours north of Scranton.
Well, I know you're, but in relative distance, it's not that far. It's right up the northeast extension, right up 81.
Okay. Yeah, I'm straight up 81.
You're like 4 hours from where I lived there on the East Coast.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah, I thought you were a lot further away, but I didn't realize you're really kind of right on that. It's basically directly north of my location on the east.
Okay. Yeah, it's not far. Not far at all. We'll have to plan something one day. I can't, I have a problem leaving the state, though.
Oh, I know you do. I don't have a problem, though.
I'm just letting you know. I mean, I would be glad to meet you halfway, but I can only go as far south as Binghamton, so that's only one-fourth of the way. Without all the hassles of paperwork.
Yeah. And I got to keep myself updated on this Ukrainian thing, though, too.
Yeah, I'm skeptical about it. I'm skeptical about it because it's the fear-mongers can take advantage of a situation like the Ukraine or Poland because it's kind of like out of reach. You know what I mean? It's not a place that many of us can get news from. We just can't. It's out of reach. We don't understand the language. If we go to their websites, we don't. You know, unless they have English-speaking websites and we're able to find them. It's not a place. You have to go search for it to find anything and to be able to discern what's going on. And I'm skeptical of all that. I'm skeptical of all the fear-mongering.
You would have to know where to look and what to look for in the language it's written in.
Yeah, it might take all day, and a whole lot of people, they're not going to do that. So the
you know, I can't read Russian. That's what I'm saying. Fortunately, I know I have a business partner and my good friend from college days in Germany. I visit him a couple times a year, and so he's always over in the Ukraine. So it's really not an issue for me to get access to finding out what's going on in the Ukraine.
Well,
I
see where the people are that visit my website, and I know, and I hope they're listening. I know that there's somebody from Moscow City that visits my website semi-regularly, at least. And if they're listening, I'd love to hear more about what's going on in the Ukraine if they could help from somebody that's actually over there. But
true too. But I would rather I'm going to rely on people that I know. I don't know the guy from Moscow. I know my buddy, and he's not going to be exaggerating stuff.
I don't know him, but I know he visits my website, and
yeah.
I know he's been to my internet radio pages. I don't know if he's here listening or not, you know. But I know he visits my internet radio pages and my website. I don't know who it is.
I just the thing that disturbed me a little bit is this stuff gets spread around and spread around and spread around, and at least half of it's not even vaguely true. I'm almost getting to the point where I don't even want to look at it.
Well, right, and that's why I'm always skeptical. You know, a lot of people, they buy right into every conspiracy theory, and you have to really watch. You have to be skeptical and not believe anything until you can ascertain the matter.
Well, I was kind of hoping I was going to get raptured in 1970 and then 1980 and then 1990 and then 2000. Hell, Lindsay kept telling me I was raptured.
Well, I hate to tell you something. You're not getting raptured at all. That's a damn shame, ain't it?
Yeah, it just really bites that I'm not going to be raptured.
That's terrible. What they're doing to those people, what they do to Christians is criminal. And the Jews bought they bought that theology. They paid for it. And it's paid off a billionfold.
Well, I believed it at one time.
Yeah, I mean, we all did to some degree.
Did you?
Well,
always thought I was one of those guys that just was suckered into everything.
No, absolutely not. There's 50 million people in the country just like you, believe me, and probably more than that. That's the way it is. People take for granted that what the churches teach them about religion is true. They take it for granted.
The CI movement, if it hadn't been for the Jesus Was Not a Jew website. And you were talking about this earlier, about, you know, that CI is out there. It just doesn't seem like it gets a lot of Main Street press simply because it's such a huge threat.
They hate us. They absolutely hate us. They will give.
Yeah, but they don't talk about it.
No, they don't, because they can't legitimize it and they can't draw attention to it. When they talk about the neo-Nazis, they draw attention to them. When they talk about the Klan or whatever it is, they draw attention to it. They cannot draw attention to us.
No, because as soon as someone sees, it's like what you said. As soon as you see it, you recognize that it's the truth, and then you're stuck. It's it.
Yeah.
Like this, as soon as I saw that Jesus was not a Jew website, you know, basically Mike Delaney's stuff there, and I started reading a little bit, it doesn't take long before you figure out that it's the truth, and where, you know, why couldn't I have seen that 10 years ago?
He actually posted a one of the first radio programs, you know, talk show radio programs I did with Eli, Mike posted on that website. That's it. That's how I first heard of Mike. Through Eli, when Eli told me that Mike posted that program, that recording. We did a recording on the difference between a Jew and a Judahite, a member of the tribe of Judah. We did a program on that, and Mike posted that on that website. And that was, I think, maybe the second or third program I did with Eli after I got out of prison. I came home on December 8th, and Eli had me on talk show, I think, December 13th. So, I've been on it ever since. Did I lose you?
No, I'm still here.
Oh, okay.
I'm just thinking.
That's okay. I it was so quiet, I could hear a pin drop. I thought maybe I lost the connection.
No, well, at least I got through the shock phase tonight with the two women. It'll be interesting to see if anything sticks. I doubt it, though.
It'll be interesting to see if they speak to you tomorrow. Because that's, you know, I've actually had many occasions in my life where people wouldn't even want to talk to me again. It's crazy, but it's true. They wouldn't even want to talk to me again. I'm a hater and I'm evil, and how dare you say that about those God's chosen people, and oh man.
Well, fortunately these two aren't that religious. But it doesn't really make any difference.
That's good.
I'll go on to the next group.
They're either gonna get it or they're not, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And I'm not sure exactly who gets it, though. I've been trying to figure that out.
You can never, ever tell. But disaffected people get it more often than not. People that are searching, they get it. They've already been, you know, I believe that people that are searching, God is calling them. That's what I believe. And sometimes they still don't hear it, because they're still too full of their preconceived notions and can't let them go. It's a very it's a very hard thing for a man. I mean, what if I came out with some crazy, you're an electrical engineer, and I came out with some crazy theory on how an electron moves through a circuit, and it's totally different from everything you ever learned in school and that what you know about electricity, and it turns out that I could reproduce it in an experiment, you'll probably still reject it for quite some time. And you'll never accept it until you see it, right? And with your own eyes. And you'll still, no matter how, and I can tell you, look, you, this is what you do. You go to your laboratory, you do this, and this. And you'll just say, you're a quack. Get out of here. There ain't no way that's going to work. It's not like that. Well, it's the same thing with the Bible. It's this is the way it is, and go read this verse and this verse and this verse and this verse, and they say, you're a quack, get out of here, there ain't no way that's the way it is. It's the same thing. It's so different from the established dogma that you gotta be a nut when it comes out of your mouth. And that's the illusion, that's the analogy I'm trying to make. Is, you know, you could probably come up with a few things about electricity that are so contrary to the established dogma, you would never believe me, and you may never do the experiment because it's so contrary. So
I don't know. There's something a little bit different in me than that, because I've never really been comfortable with anything that's established. There always seems to me that there's a missing piece.
Well, that's
even with the electrical side.
Most people are going to stick to their guns with the established dogma. There's no way you're going to tell me that everything I learned in school was wrong. There's no way you're going to tell me that everything that my professors taught me is wrong. There's no way you're going to convince me that these priests are lying. And it's the same that's the way it is with the Bible.
Yeah, that's what I do find interesting about a lot of people is they don't question anything that they're taught. Absolutely
nothing.
No, they
all down. Pigs feeding at a trough.
Yep.
And I tell people all the time, I want to be questioned. Please question me. Please go back and double check behind me. That's the way it should be.
I had an error in one of my programs I wrote over the weekend, and I finally found the error myself, and I told my students, I said, I expect on Monday morning that you're going to find the error that I found in my own code because it's so simple to find. Just challenging them.
I bet 20% might find it.
Actually, there was one student in the class that found it.
Okay. See, I was giving
it. It was a real simple error, but I was even surprised that one found it.
That's nuts. It's programming errors are the easiest to make, and they're errors in logic.
I don't even know what I was thinking when I did it. I was trying to figure out what the heck I was. It was such an obvious error when I went back and looked at it, but I can never see my errors when I'm doing them.
Well, I hate to tell you how many endless loops I made. That weren't supposed to be so.
Yeah. Well, Bill,
I'd like to.
Is it just down to the two of us here? Or?
Yeah. Well, there's about 10 or 12 people in the forum, but nobody else on it. Yeah, there's other Central California. I don't know if he said a word all night. I don't know who that is.
Yeah, I'm here, James.
Oh, James. I was just wondering where you were. How you doing?
Oh, pretty good. I just soaking it up.
Okay.
I was going to say something when Patty was on there, but I didn't. I'm just listening to you guys.
And Sword Brethren's line's still open, but he's not.
Hey, does Patty have a, does she have a website on the vaccine stuff? Or?
Well, Wendy does, but I'm guilty of not knowing what it is. You might find it on my forum, on the Christigenia forum.
I think I listened to her and Wendy on a program one night where I can't remember if it was Eli was interviewing a doctor that was kind of claiming that some vaccines may be okay, and they got on and just blasted them.
Probably Joel Meyer, right, Joel Meyer. I wrote a paper because of Joel Meyer. That Christianity and Pharmacia, that Christianity and Pharmaceuticals paper I wrote, I wrote that because of Joel Meyer. He listens to a lot of our programs, but he's an advocate of some vaccines. And from a Christian viewpoint, I can't advocate any vaccines, period.
Oh, no, I can't see that either. I think it's clearly ridiculous.
And I've explained why, but Joel won't get it, you know. And that's a case of not being able to overcome the medical training that he believes he has. And I think he finally stopped arguing with me about it. I wish he would, because it gets old. Yeah, you're either going to take the scripture at its word, or you're going to take the wisdom of man at its word. That's the way it is. That there's no compromise. To me, there's no compromising the scripture. Even though people insist on doing it all the time. That's just the way it is.
I think you heard on the other night, I heard you a little bit with the food laws. You said that, what did you think about that? You were saying that you really don't go too much by that, or what?
Well, no, I do. I observe all the food laws. I don't judge other people for not observing them, but I observe all the food laws, all the unclean and the clean animals.
And the clean animals, yeah.
Yeah, I don't eat pork. I haven't eaten pork in 12 years.
I haven't done it since 72.
I don't eat shellfish. I won't eat catfish. I observe the food laws are very. And that's it, you're not going to go to hell if you suck down some shrimp scampi. I mean, it's just not going to happen. But what you're punishing your own body. I mean, there are good reasons why we shouldn't be eating those things. And people that eat those things are probably going to shorten their lifespans. But you know, the thing about that is that you never know. It's hard for me to tell my mother and my grandmother about the food laws, because I have a 92-year-old grandmother, been sucking down swine all her life. She loves this stuff. She's sitting upstairs, the picture of health. And she has an uncle that's still alive. And she's had one uncle. My uncle, he's my great-great uncle, Waldo, is 97, and he's still alive. And he eats pork, too. Pork, and he's from Boston. I mean, he's from Massachusetts, and they love, and that's like the fried clam state. How do you tell them not to eat fried clams, lobsters, and pigs when they're 97 years old? And it's for their health.
Well, on that pork, it's been many, many years. I've heard a lot of this stuff over the many, many, many years. And the pork, I know it's an abomination to you. I love the stuff too, but I quit eating it in 72. That's about the only thing I've probably ever done right. But there used to be something about you can cook the hell out of it, and there's still the poop pop or the something still alive in it unless you cook it down.
Yeah, I've heard that, and I don't know. I don't eat the stuff. We're not supposed to eat it. There's got to be a good reason.
Well, there's literature. Hey, I know you guys can find it. I bet Jim Wickstrom probably knows.
Well, you know, what I'm saying is I've heard all this, but
okay.
I don't know about
it on
because
it.
I ain't
stuff.
The guy that was looking through the microscope. Okay, so until I'm the guy that's looking through the microscope, I can't say that I know.
Okay, I hear you. But I've read there's been – I forgot what the hell you call it. In fact, I have one booklet here. Here's some damn place with all, I got so much crap, no way I can keep up with it, but, I do have something about something swine and the, hell, I don't know. You know, I've seen stuff over the years, but, you know, you lose track of that stuff and it's hard to keep up with it all.
Well, anyway, so, I think that it's like anything else. The individual has to choose on whether or not he's going to obey the law for himself. But
It's I'm sure it's for your betterment if you obey the food laws.
Well, I don't know if it was you guys or what, but just here in the last few weeks, I could have swore I heard somebody talking about, you know, people, pork has cancer-causing things in it and everything else, supposedly.
Yeah, well, all I'm saying is that my grandmother's 97 and she's upstairs, and because she's attained such a great age, and she, well, she's 92, and she's in very good health, how could I possibly convince her that something's bad for her health?
Well, that's just like Colonel Gale. He used to eat shrimp, and I eat it once in a while, but with the little bit of teeth I got left, I can't hardly touch it. But, hey, you know what? When you go against the Yah's law, you pay for it one way or another. And if you've been warned and you do something, you can't blame nobody but yourself.
I think a lot of this stuff comes just down to the unnatural food.
Somebody in the forum mentioned that the Germans perfected pig. And I really believe that it's the Romans that taught them how to eat pig. I can't prove it, but Herodotus talked about the Scythians, who I can prove are the ancestors of the Germans. The Scythians not eating swine or using it for any purpose. But the Romans ate everything, and sometimes I suspect that they probably taught the Germans how to eat pig.
And the Germans sure loved their pig.
It's just conjecture. Oh, yeah, you can't separate a German from a sausage.
Oh, by God, I don't touch it. I'm quarter German, at least, and maybe even from the real tribe of Judah, from what I've been told,
well,
plus half Swedish and quarter Dutch, and who knows. But I know I'm all white boy.
Well, my buddy in Germany, he avoids pork now after I told him about the food laws.
Yeah, good.
So, I mean, there's a lot of, that's not the only food in Germany.
No, but they also eat a lot of horse over there, from what I understand.
Hmm.
I don't know about that.
Oh yeah, I've read that, and I've heard that they eat horse meat pretty commonly over there.
Yeah,
far off the
kind
wall.
Of bad meat also.
Yes, horse is unclean also.
Off
oh,
the
really?
Wall, have you guys either one of you ever heard? And it's in some of our literature somewhere, where in the latter days, they're supposed to be in Europe or in Russia, I guess Russia or all that area over there. There's supposed to be like 5-6 million horses over there, and they may use horses to come down across Soviet Union into, Canada up there.
Well, let's not take prophecy too literally, all right? Because the horse in prophecy is simply just an instrument of war.
Okay. But if you guys, you know what I'm talking about up there, where they're, say they're going to come down through, you know, up to Canada where it freezes up there a certain time of the year, and they claim they can come right across down through the frozen ocean.
It's
into
not
the...
very likely.
Okay, gotcha.
Somebody's just making up stories. You know how cold it gets? You know how long you're going to survive in that weather?
Got to be 100 below zero.
I think the container ships are more likely.
Oh, yeah.
That's easy access.
The Chinese control the container ships now. And they've got billions of them. And yes, they control enough of our ports to do just about anything they'd want.
Not to mention, if the Mexicans keep reproducing at the rate they are, there isn't going to be a West Coast. Not for whites, anyhow.
Yeah, we're all
Monterey County
just here.
Monterey County just recently turned predominantly Mexican.
Damn. I don't doubt it a bit.
Which is pretty impressive. I mean, when you consider that it wasn't that long ago where it was predominantly white.
I think that every,
but then these statistics, I never know whether they're true. I have to go outside, but I can tell by going outside.
Well, they have an awful lot more kids than we do, that's for sure.
That is absolutely the case. We are not, we are our worst enemy. We are not obeying, and that's, I mean, it started that way. This is the whole problem we have right now is because of disobedience from the beginning on.
Absolutely, and read the blessings of obedience in Leviticus, I think it's Leviticus chapter 26, Deuteronomy chapter 32 or 33, the blessings of obedience and the cursings of disobedience. And this is a direct result of the fact that we are enraptured by the lusts of the devil, by pornography and sports and all the evils of the flesh and entertainment and this is what we've forsaken our God, and this is what we get.
Well, now I'm relying on Mike Delaney to repopulate the earth. Because I'm not doing a very good job.
I had my 6 kids.
Yeah, I haven't had any kids.
Oh, wow.
Well, I had one that I know of, a daughter, and, you know, who knows, but I wished I'd had more, but it ends up the way it is. That's all there is to it.
I wished I had more, too, but they put me away. I probably would have.
Yeah, you was in there, 11 years? I was in there a year, but still got the experience, but you was probably in a more hardcore. I was just at Lompoc in the camp, but it wasn't all that.
Yeah, you were a camper.
Yeah, but it wasn't all as easy. It wasn't no damn, like you said, unless you had the money. Cause just like at Lompoc, hell, the niggers used to have whores in there, and you get dope, you get any damn thing you wanted if you had the money or
In a camp
connections or whatever.
I mean, it's a little hotter where I was, but you can in a camp.
Well, I know
I feel like a minority.
When I left, when I got out of there in 83, I went in there in 82. When I got out of there in 83, we used to have just like a little cubicle. And when I left there, it was all being doubled up. I was lucky I still had a cube of my own. And the last, that was back in 83, but, they were 2 to a cubicle. God, I mean, you talk about crowded. That was back in 83, so who knows what the hell it is now.
Well, Robert, if you think you could get up here, I mean, you're more than welcome to come.
Oh, I'll be up to visit you. Don't worry.
Yeah, you're, the door's
especially open. If I'm welcome.
I got a sleeper in the living room and the door's open.
There's a few places I want to get around to. I want to go visit that Eric Huffschmidt, too, find out about that guy. Try to invite myself down there on my way to San Diego once, but he didn't seem real anxious to have me visit him. I told him I'd take him out to lunch or dinner. Well, he was the one who pointed out the fact that, we're always so anxious to trust people and look for a leader. And this planned opposition, I never understood that until he explained that on his website.
Oh, okay. I'm surprised he explained that.
I didn't catch the fact that the Jews were funding both sides.
Yeah.
I thought there was a good side and a bad side. I didn't realize they were both bad, or 3 of them were bad, or 10 of them were bad sides.
Yes, it is amazing.
It's like they subvert everything. Every angle you go to, there's just another subversion.
Just listen to Michael Savage.
Oh, well, he's terrible.
Well,
I can't listen to that guy.
I understand.
Me either. I hate him.
I totally understand what you're saying. But he has the conservative political argument. He has 99% of it. He has it right. But he's a Zionist. Why does he exist? He exists to capture as many disenchanted people as possible and keep them in mainstream conservative
conservatism, and at the same time make them feel like there's a solution when there's not, and at the same time keep mainstream conservatives on the side of the Zionists.
Same thing as the Birch
and
Society.
And it's all very effective. It's all very effective.
Birch
because
Society.
Because he has 10 or 12 million listeners that are totally enraptured by him. And they think that's the solution. And so he's basically neutralized 10 or 12 million possible of a possible opposition to Zionism. And Michael said he programs these people. If you're anti-Semitic, you're anti-American. He equates the two very effectively. And you know, to effectively enough to trick most of the people most of the time. And it works. It's a formula that works. And then I believe they had their Alex Joneses just to scrape up what Michael Savages don't capture. Yeah, do you follow me? Am I making
sense? Yeah, well, Savage and Limbaugh, I kind of caught their stuff at the same time and kind of gave them both up.
Well, right, you did well to do that. But most people don't.
I couldn't. There were too many contradictions in their talking. Alex Jones, I thought, was entertaining enough. I listened to him a bit longer.
That's
you know,
only
he,
two,
he
isn't
was he? In 1999 when he was telling me that the Chinese army was coming across the border.
I heard they're already here.
Well, I know, but he was making it out that they were attacking us and that it was the end of the world on December 31st.
And how many false prophecies can a guy have before he loses credibility?
Well, I don't know. Lindsay's had one every 10 years.
Yeah.
I watched him. In 1970, the world was going to end. Then it was 80. Then it was 90. Then it was 2000. Now, I'm not for sure, but I imagine 2010 is the next end.
It would make sense.
Yeah.
End time prophecies like a Fibonacci sequence.
Hey, you were mentioning the Birch Society?
Yep, they're phony as hell.
You know, I used to be a chapter leader here for the Birch Society.
I used to be with them thicker. They were against the tax rebellion. They were against it. Either they went for voting for it or writing your senator or congressman. You know, just write it all and everything would be fine.
Absolutely useless. Once I figured out how useless that was.
Well, they had some good stuff. I think they had some good stuff or by other people, but, you know, just like a man can tell you something 99 and 10% of the time is truth, but if you lie to me one time, you're still a phony son of a bitch in my book.
You know, when they lost me, completely lost me, I mean, I was already out of it because there were also, again, contradictions there, but they really lost me with the Twin Towers. When they started promoting what the government had to say on that, that was so obvious that they were fraud that I didn't even, I unsubscribed to their magazine and everything else.
Hmm.
You know anything about the Birch Society, Bill?
No, only a few things that I read in prison.
Yeah.
And it wasn't.
They did have some good stuff. They had some great articles on global warming. Got to meet the one guy at MIT. I can't remember his name now. Linz or something like that.
Yeah, they don't seem to be any much different from mainstream conservatism.
I have a Jew running it though now.
Well, of course. Tells you everything about them right there, everything you need to know.
Yep, just another controlled opposition.
Yeah, and a lot of times an organization might start out legitimately. And as soon as the Jews think it's going to go somewhere, they're going to infiltrate it and take it over.
Oh, I imagine it was infiltrated long before I got into it.
Well, I'm sure, I don't know if you guys have heard it or not, but I've heard from in the past many years ago that there's guys that sleepers, they call them sleepers, that have been in some of the good organizations for 20, 30, 40, 50 years and you don't even know they're the enemy. I guess you've heard some of that stuff before.
Well, you know, you do know that they're the enemy if you know your Bible. That's what I believe.
I'm hoping I can't be duped again, but I guess everything's possible.
Well, it's, you know, read the book, and somebody's either teaching the book or they're not. They're either teaching the book or they're teaching something fleshly. And everything fleshly is going to fail. That we can't vote ourselves out of the beast. We can't shoot down the beast. We can't read your scripture. That's where all source of knowledge and strength come from. That's exactly what's going on in the world. It's the only thing that explains history. And it explains all history. It explains all the history from the last 5,000 years perfectly.
So how far did you, speaking of history, how far did you get into this plague stuff tonight? I missed the first part of the program.
Well, we didn't, you know, Patricia said a lot, but most of her angle is from the, I've read it in emails, a lot of what she said. And she has a lot of common sense, but I just still I'm skeptical even about a lot of the things that she seems to tend to think are actually going on. But I still remain skeptical about a lot of it. I want to hear the news reports from somebody who understands what the local news over there is saying.
I'm not sure these guys can pull off something without injecting people, if you know what I mean.
Well,
if you want to create a plague, I'm not sure you can just spray it down from the sky. I mean, you can throw chemicals on people, and you can do all kinds of stuff like that to weaken the immune system. But that's in order to create something that's going to destroy an awful lot of people, probably the easiest way to do it is to inject it right in them.
Well, that's the easiest way to do it from a biological viewpoint, but it's not the easiest way to do it from a political viewpoint. And they have been studying we know they've had biological weapons budgets for 25, 30 years now. There's no doubt. And there's no doubt in my mind that the CIA and the Mossad probably haven't been involved in this for a long time. But I'm still skeptical as to the scale of what they could pull off in a foreign government, in a foreign situation. I would believe it's easier for them to perpetrate more criminal acts here than it would be in Eastern Europe. They have a higher degree of control over the people here. They have a higher degree of control over the media here.
What do you mean criminal acts as far as what?
Spraying populations with biological agents, that's a criminal act. Would they be able to pull that off in an Eastern European nation?
I don't see why not. Just dump it from an airplane.
Well, I mean, nations have airspace. Nations have, every nation has rules and regulations over who's going to fly over their airspace, what time, flight paths. That they're not backwards nations like what we see them on television. They're a lot like us in every respect. They have a lot of the same defense infrastructure that we have. It's not like you could rent a 747 and go fly over Czechoslovakia or to Ukraine or Belarus. That's not happening. And in many ways, they're just as sophisticated as we are. And would a hostile entity like say a CIA or a Mossad hostile to the Ukrainians, or some pilot hired by some Rothschild banker, would they just be able to fly over to Ukraine and dump what they wanted on the population?
I would think that would be from the government itself, but the government's certainly not working for the Ukraine right now.
Well, okay, now that's another thing. Now, would the entire government go along with this? Wouldn't somebody in their government, I mean, there's a lot of nationalists over there. Wouldn't some of them squawk up? Wouldn't some of them speak out?
I keep wondering that about the U.S., and all I see is traitors, at least 535 of them in Congress. I don't see a whole lot of people speaking for me or for you.
Right, but everybody in the Ukrainian Air Force would have to be a traitor. Pull this off. That's all I'm saying. That's why I'm skeptical.
I just see that kind of stuff can easily go on. Somebody can dump stuff out of the sky. That does not surprise me. There's always some spraying going on over crops. Heck, I mean, they sprayed the population of California here for flies right over, something eating the apple crop, and it was only going to cause $100,000 worth of damage, and it cost $4 million to spray, and they weren't even over the trees. It was over the populated areas. Right over Monterey, right over Marina, right over Seaside.
Several times.
Over the populated areas. They weren't even spraying over the trees. What the hell was that they were spraying? That was government sanctioned. If they can get away with it here, you're saying they can't get away with that kind of garbage in the Ukraine?
Well, what I'm saying is I believe they could get away with it more easily here. That's what I said.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because their control over this population is, I think it's tighter than their control over any other world population, except for maybe the one in Palestine.
I'll tell you what, I hauled ass out of California when that was going on. I wasn't going to sit here and be some kind of insect for them to spray. I couldn't believe that people weren't shooting those planes out of the air.
Well, I've heard that's been done. Some of that's been done, too. Talk, you know, from Air Force guys, and they sent them, supposedly, I heard crap that they were going to shoot them down, and then they were transferred out of the country and blah, blah. You know, I've heard all kinds of things.
I just couldn't believe that someone would spray chemicals over a population. I'd never heard of such nonsense in all my life, and it went on.
Well, supposedly this is another story, when it first started, the Air Force supposedly was doing the spraying of these chemtrails or whatever, and then it got to be so much so then they put it out to private contractors, and that's all, you know, whether that's true or not, I don't know.
Yeah, well, this was real life going on here in Monterey. They were taking off right from the Monterey Airport, spraying the population at night.
I don't doubt it a bit.
All night long.
And I'm sure it still happens.
Well, it doesn't now. They've outlawed it again, but you won't see me here again. They start doing that, I'm out of the state again. I'm not sitting here for that kind of crap.
Well, I know California sure has changed. Sure has changed in my lifetime, that's for sure. It's hell, you used to be able to go down to Inglewood or Lenox or whatever back in the 40s, and it was wheat fields, and now it's just nothing but niggers or Chinese or whatever's down there anymore. I don't know. I left there in 63 and haven't been back.
Well, guys, it's 1:30 on the East Coast, just about, and I'm tired.
Yeshua, bless you both, everybody.
Short. But, I'll look forward to your visit one day soon, Robert.
Okay. That sounds good.
I'll be back here tomorrow night at 8 p.m. on a Cristaleo's call. God bless. God bless.
God bless you both. Everybody. Bye.
Bye.